to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Gene Friday, president of the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans, going to be here talking about this voting bill the Republicans are trying to ram through, the voting ID bill. Oh, we just want to have, people to have their IDs. You know, just show your ID. You know, it's so easy. It's so simple. And it sounds easy. It sounds simple for someone my age who's got to go to work every day. Who it's part of your life. But I think of my grandmother who has not driven a car in probably 10 years, has not had a driver's license in 10 years, doesn't have the ability to go downtown to go get a photo ID, doesn't have the ability to hop on a bus and go down and get an ID. Nope, don't have that chance at all. So what will happen, she will be disenfranchised. She will be the one that doesn't get the vote. And this really, honestly and truthfully, if you look at it, you look at through the prism of Republicans understand that they're outnumbered. And the only way that they can win is to suppress the vote. The only way that they can win is to hold down the number of seniors, the number of elderly, the number of poor, the number of minorities who vote. That is the reality. And that's what they're going after. And you look at state after state after state who have passed these type laws, that's what they're going for. They can't get away with the shenanigans that they got away with in 2000 and 2002 and in 2004. Can't get away with that. Same thing in 2006 in Ohio and other places. So now they're gonna institutionalize it. They're going to make it part of the law. So it'll be interesting to see what she's got to say and what the position of the Alliance for Retired Americans, what their position is on this. So the big news, evidently, obviously the big news, the wiener has landed. The wiener has been chopped off. They bit down on the wiener. Whatever wiener jokes you want, the wiener is gone. The wiener is resigned. The wiener has left. The wiener has left the building. So have we got it all out of our system? Any more wiener jokes you can think of, Jake? Just, you know, throw another something out there. Get it out of your system.
If I can make a comment, it was kind of sad, to be honest, Rick, to see a man like that with that much ability have to say goodbye. And I think he was a great congressman. I mean, he represented those who were voiceless. And we need people like that in Congress, and it was sad. And if he would have done the right thing the first press conference, he probably could have saved his career, and it is a sad situation. It truly is.
Now, I mean, you look at this and you go, at some point, don't you go, the rumor's out there, it's there, I need to get ahead of this. You know, I've learned that lesson throughout my life. There have been times where I've made mistakes, and, you know, Lord knows we've all made them. But sometimes, and I tell this to my kids, you know, if you do something wrong, admit it. Come out, come clean, just admit it. Because generally, you're not going to get yourself into as much trouble. When you start digging that hole, when you start lying once, then you got to remember that lie. And then you got to make a lie to make that lie fit. Then you got to remember that lie. And before you know it, you're tongue twisted. So I hate to see the guy go. I liked him. But here again, when you do dumb stuff and you are the public enemy number one of the radical right, it's no surprise that he end up where he is now. And I hope the best for him and his wife and their soon to be born child here in the next several months. So the best for him. Now, what happens from this point forward? What happens in that district? Who now becomes the congressman? Hopefully we find someone who is as passionate about working class issues as he was, somebody who is as passionate about standing up for what is right as he was. That's the hope, and we'll see where this goes. There's been really no reports on who's going to be stepping to the forefront, so we will see that in probably in the coming days, I'm sure. So that again, sad day, but the wiener has landed. The deflated the wiener, whatever you want to say. Anthony Weiner is no longer a congressman from New York, and we've all lost a little bit. And you look at the salacious nature of our media. They couldn't get enough of it. They couldn't run enough with it. And for a while, I tried to avoid it. But at the end of it, you couldn't get enough of it. I guess that says something about us. Interestingly enough, at the same time, Nancy Pelosi had a press conference. And you know what she wanted to talk about? Jobs. And that's what we need to be talking about. How do we get people back to work? How do we bring this country back together? And I look at this day back in history, according to history.com. 1858 was the day that Abraham Lincoln, who was a newly nominated senatorial candidate from Illinois, said, you know what? This nation faces a real crisis, and it could destroy the Union. He was talking to more than 1,000 delegates about the reality that, like it says in the New Testament, a house divided against itself cannot stand. And he was talking about the issue of slavery well before he became president, well before the Civil War, saying, look, this is going to bring us down. We need to deal with it. And at the time, what you had is you had people, even in the Republican Party, the very progressive Republican Party of the day, understand, they were the Reform Party, not the party that we see today. I think Lincoln would probably smack every one of these Republicans today. Not cut from the same cloth, even though they love to cozy up to it. But the reality is, as you look at this country right now, where is the next Abraham Lincoln going to come from, going to bring us back together? Because what's happened is we've had a very divided nation. And there are big moneyed interests who are benefiting from us being so divided. You can't get two people to agree that the sky's blue half the time. And that's because we're inundated, constantly inundated with me, 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 me. Worry about me. I mean, you look at the attacks that have been going on, the attacks on workers' rights, the attacks on Social Security, on Medicare. You look at all this stuff, and it's meant to divide us. The attacks on Social Security dividing granny from the high school student. The attacks on Medicare. Again, granny and the uninsured poor working person. The attacks on Medicaid. Young mothers and young children who live in poverty and people who are upper middle class who are fortunate enough to have health care. It's all about dividing us. And you look this week at the whole argument over the unemployment benefits. You had Republicans who were out there saying, well, we want to slash and burn. We want to make sure that we can give back to our big business clients. We want to make sure that we make those people go out there and get jobs like they're not trying already. Structurally, this bill did nothing. Senate Bill 1030 did nothing to change the unemployment problem. They did nothing to make sure that CareerLink and the other agencies in this state have jobs for people to apply for. Nothing. There's nothing structurally there. I mean, as part of a law, you should be saying, you know what, if you're hiring people, first place you should be coming, and we'll give you a tax break to do it, is here to this CareerLink or here to the Unemployment Bureau to make sure that people who are collecting unemployment are right there. So that you can marry up people. You know, maybe there's a job out there that someone doesn't know and they haven't had the opportunity to apply for it. Wouldn't it be nice if you had even just a computer program who said, you know what, this guy, this job might work? Put them together. Because if you listen to Corbett and you listen to the Republicans in this state and across the country, really, we don't have a jobs problem. It's not a, you know, it's not a problem that there aren't enough jobs. It's a frictional problem. You know, the workers just aren't finding the jobs. The jobs are out there, and they're just too lazy to go look for them. You know, that was the frame during the campaign, and that's the frame they keep pushing out there. When the reality is right now, you still got five people looking for a job, for every one job that's out there. So four people don't get work. Understand that. So you look at the bill that did happen. Senate Bill 1030 was a compromise bill. When it came to the House, it has been compromised even further and weakened even further, as we talked about last night. But, and you got to give credit where it's due. People in the labor movement, the unions did a fantastic job of beating back some of the really draconian things that were in it. The stuff that big business wanted in the worst way. The big sloppy wet kisses that were in House Bill 916. They wanted it, man. This was their chance. This was their wet dream. Nobody could imagine that 916 would be stopped. And it was. Because you had reasonable Republicans who stepped forward and said, you know what? This is actually going to hurt people. This is too much. This is too extreme. And I'm hoping that those Republicans who have finally stood up, found their voice, taken a deep breath and said, you know what? You guys have gotten too far out of hand. You're trying to move this state too far to the radical right. Hopefully those people continue to stand up. And I hope we encourage them to stand up. Because you look at this unemployment bill, while there are some you know, not so great things in it, it still does avoid kicking 45,000 people off the unemployment rolls this Saturday. And it does save another 90,000 beyond that to be kicked off by the end of the year. So those folks are going to be okay for a while the economy recovers. What it does do is it slows the rate of growth of the top compensation piece. It grows by 1 to 1.5% every year until 2018. It's going to hurt people down the road. But for right now, they didn't get to go back and cut anything out of it. They went after severance pay. So anybody who made over $17,000, $1,800 when they got fired, that's anything up to that, they'll be okay. Anything over, they'll lose benefits on. Which they're saying, if it were the law of the land right now, 6,000 people would be affected by it. And what I find interesting is they keep saying, well, we're going to save $114 million this year. That's what we're going to save on unemployment. And I keep saying, you know what? That's $114 million that came out of the local small businesses. That's $114 million that didn't put food on the table. That's $114 million that didn't put shoes on kids' feet. But, you know, we had to give our pound of flesh. And fortunately, there were folks who were willing to stand up and fight back over this. So that is a good thing. Now you look in Florida, you know, the working people in Florida, you know, they stood up for themselves as well. You remember me talking about Rick Scott's idea, we're gonna drug test all of those public sector workers. We're gonna drug test them whenever we want. Well, the workers fought back, took it to court, and now what they're kind of saying, now Rick Scott went back and secretly in the dark of night signed a suspension of the draconian law. It was only until the ACLU found it, circulated copies of it today, that we found that Rick Scott backed down. So I think what we're seeing across the country, people rising up, fighting back, and beating back this radical, extreme right-wing agenda to just destroy working conditions in this country and to harm workers. And that's a good thing. We're going to take a quick break. Come back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Me making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Battle of Blair Mountain was commemorated recently by a 50-mile march and rally in West Virginia. That battle was the largest armed confrontation in U.S. history between workers and corporate gun thugs.
Solidarity forever.
As marchers set off on the five-day trek to Blair Mountain, a retired miner proudly held aloft a sign representing United Mine Workers of America, Local 1440. Its 1,200 members endorsed the march and rally to save a critical piece of labor history. The battlefield along the mountain ridge is where, in 1921, thousands of miners fighting for the right to join the union confronted coal company security forces and county sheriffs allied with the coal barons. Although national UMWA leaders support preserving the battlefield, they did not endorse the march. Chuck Keeney is the great-grandson of Frank Keeney, a mine workers' leader from 1917 to 1924, who was at the Battle of Blair Mountain. He says the miners' fight for collective bargaining rights, which was not won until more than a decade after the battle, was a key demand.
This is where people laid the groundwork for an American middle class, you know, for weekends, for 40-hour work weeks. And if you think labor organizations aren't important now, look at Wisconsin, look at Michigan, look at all of the things that's happening. These issues are incredibly important, and Blair Mountain is a place where people can rally to that and see that labor is something that's vitally important to the economic prosperity of the United States.
On Blair Mountain, West Virginia, I'm Melinda Tuhus, reporting for Workers Independent News.
As WIN's Lauren Schmidt reports, there's a people's alternative to the Republican take from the workers to give to the rich Wisconsin state budget. The People's Rights Campaign and the Labor Community Network marched to Department of Administration Secretary Mike Hipsch's office to demand accessibility to their house, decrying Hipsch as a public menace for crushing the public's right to assemble.
The campaign delivered their demands that DOA Secretary stop the attacks and open the Capitol.
We're a part of the People's Rights Campaign, which is really talking about putting forward an alternative agenda, that we reject this budget and that cuts are the only answer, and cuts are not the answer to the budget crisis. We need to look at making sure the corporations and the rich are paying their fair share. And we need to talk about expanding education, making sure there's good jobs, providing health care for people in this really difficult time. They're taking Wisconsin in the wrong direction, and we're looking at really turning things around and making sure that we put forward our own agenda that's about people and people's rights and not about profits for corporations and Wall Street.
How do you solve a deficit?
Tax, tax, tax the rich!
Pacifica Radio called it riveting. Get your copy of WIN's one-hour documentary, This Is What Democracy Looks Like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
I got it!
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Ike on line one. How you doing tonight, Ike?
Yeah, all right, Rick. Hey, I'm just going to talk past you for a second. I want everybody out there to listen up, and I need to hear from you. Let me tell you where I'm at. I'm a 99er, all right? I got a call to maybe paint a porch tomorrow. I look every day. I went out to my house yesterday around the corner, and there's some apartments that are in my neighborhood that caught fire. There's some boys there with Georgia tags, and I stopped and I talked to them because I'm from Georgia, you know, and I'm like, hey, man, you know, I know all about this. I've done firework. I know exactly how to do this. You know, if you got some work, hey, it's all good, yada, yada, and we're talking back and forth. And then I say, oh, and by the way, I heard Georgia passed that illegal immigrant law, and he just bowed up on me, and he goes, yeah, they're going to overturn that one. And then he looked me straight in the face. Now, I swear to God, he looked me straight in the face, and he said, you know what? It's your fault, and people like you, you American workers, that brought them here in the first place because you're too lazy, you show up or don't show up, and you show up drunk, and you don't do your job. He blames it on me, right?
I can't imagine that went well.
No, it didn't. As a matter of fact, to tell you the truth, just like it was back in the day, let me tell you something, pal. If this would have been going on when I was 21 years old, I would work any of them in the dirt, and anybody that had the nerve to say that crap to my face, I got news for you. I wouldn't even put the car in park. They would either be in my car through the window, or I'd be out the window on them. But here's the point. Here's another point I got to make to you, all right? And this is why I'm trying to talk to your callers, all right? Listen, the Republican idea of health care is you go to the church, okay? You go to the church or you go to the social charities and you beg for help,
right?
Or you count on your neighbors for help. There ain't going to be no more social safety net, correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. Let me tell you what's happening with me, brother. I'm passing blood and tissue, all right? I've been dealing with the church with a retired doctor, and I've been trying to get help, all right? Not only that, but I've got chest pains and some other things going on, all right? This has been going on for 3 months, and I'm trying to get somebody to help me. I'm trying to avoid going to the emergency room. I'm trying to do what the Republicans told me to do, which is you go to the church and you ask for help. Well, damn it, you know what? I still ain't got no help. I don't know if I'm going to live or die. I've been living with this for 3 months now. And you know what? It's not that I'm too proud to go and ask. Yeah, I can walk into the emergency room. I'm in Charleston, South Carolina. I can walk into the teaching hospitals here that are publicly funded and federally funded. I can walk into the emergency room and go, look, here's the deal. And they probably take care of me. But I am really trying to do this the way the Republicans envision it. And guess what? I get nowhere.
Can I give you some advice? Go to the emergency room.
Brother, you know,
don't.
Yeah, give me advice, Rick, but I'll tell you what. I'm getting to the point now where I'm just like, you know what? See, I'm a different type person. I don't give a damn anymore. I really don't give a damn anymore. And that's what makes me so damn dangerous, because I tell you the truth, I'd just soon get in the street and get shot down as I would anything. I am so sick and tired of this crap. But please, go ahead and give me some advice.
No, you got to get taken care of first. Your health is most important. Don't try and make the political point, because the Republicans are wrong. You're not going to get the health care you need at a church. You're not going to get that kind of charity. You need to go and get yourself taken care of. Can you not file for Medicaid? You've been unemployed for a long time. You said you were one of the 99ers.
Rick, I'll tell you something else. I'm living with my wife, and she needs disability. She's on all these drugs and stuff. She's in a mess. And she just got a whole packet of stuff. We've been fighting with them forever trying to get her disability. And, you know, that's the funny part. You know, whether you pay into Medicare, Medicaid, or whatever it is you do through your working life, you know, they don't have a problem. It's real easy for them to take your money. But, damn it, when you need some help, when you need to go back and get with them, oh, well, you got to fill this out and trip kit, and we're going to ask you this, and we got to see that, and bing, da, bada, boom. I mean, they make it so damn hard on you. That, you know, good luck getting disability, good luck getting any damn help. And as a matter of fact, that's the other reason that I'm really, you know, I don't want to go down there, because, you know, they got to stick their nose so far up my butt. It's like, well, what did you eat for lunch? I mean, for God's sake, they can't just help you and be nice about it. Rick,
I hear you,
look,
man.
Dude, I'm telling you, I am the perfect candidate for the revolution. Yeah, I'm ready. Okay, if I've got nothing left to lose, I'm telling you right now, these boys keep playing this garbage, and you put me in this position, yeah, you're right, and you can flag the tape, and you can talk to the FBI, you can talk to anybody you want, but I'll tell you right now, I come from the 60s, and I ain't playing.
I hear you, Ike. I...
If y'all want to roll, let's roll. I'll leave my phone number with the board op, and anybody listening to this radio right now, by God, you call up, and I'll tell you right now, if y'all want to go on Washington, y'all want to rock and roll, and y'all want to show up a stand of force, yes, sir, please, call me, because, damn it, we need to get in the street. It's long past due. We need to do this now.
I appreciate the call, Ike. Thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Rick.
I wish you the best, brother. You know, at the end of this, and you know, where my thought goes in this, is this is what happens when you live in an individual world. When, hey, we're all individuals, we're all on our own. When they've broken sufficiently broken down the unions, when they've sufficiently broken down we the people, when they go and rewrite the Constitution to where it's me the person instead of we the people, how do we take care of we the people? How do we make sure that folks have opportunity? And look, you know, I feel the pain. I do. This immigration thing, something that absolutely has to be taken care of. And it's a federal issue and it constantly not being done because we're so divided. It's frustrating. Frustrating on so many levels.
His medical problems, Rick, and the truth is, even if he takes your advice and he goes to the emergency room, yeah, initially that day they'll take care of it, but long term, he needs more than that. He needs real health care. And for a man like that, who obviously worked hard all his life, to not have available something that can save his life is absolutely sinful.
And what bothers
me, how bad must it get?
What bothers me is, like he's saying, you know, he's passing tissue, he's passing blood. Now is the time you stop things like that. Now
absolutely.
Is the time you do a little prevention. And we're very short-sighted in this country. We're not going to invest in something that could save us money down the line. And I hear that, and it's frustrating on a number of levels because this is not the country that I want to live in, where our citizens are having to choose between a place to live and living, between, you know, medicine and food, between, you know,
Well, you heard the desperation in his story and in his voice, and if enough Americans are desperate, people will go to the streets,
and
could get ugly.
And that's, you know, as I've always said, maybe it has to come to that. Maybe we have to be desperate. Maybe we have to have people with their stomachs empty for a period of time. The problem is I don't think, and this is what worries me, you know, we're not going to be able to relive the Great Depression where people began coming together. That was a different time, a different era. Those were different people. They were less armed. What fears me now is if we see that kind of mass suffering, that this turns into the Hollywood version of what the Wild West was. This is Paul Revere riding down the road, firing shots and ringing bells. This is people, you know, shooting each other in the streets so that they can feed their children. That's what worries me. And these Republicans had better think about the massive cuts that they're talking about. They had better think about the programs that they're destroying. They had better think about the path that they're taking us. You got that little snide SOB from Wisconsin, that Ryan, who, you know, just one of those kids you know when he was a kid he was an LMV. You know it. You know he was a lunch money victim. You know somebody backhanded him every day just to get him out of the way. And now he's got a little bit of power, and he's going to stick it to every person in this country. And it's angering, and it's frustrating, because we're still not hearing anybody really talking about how to fix the economy, how to get people back to work, people like Ike. And when Larry Summers is saying we need a stimulus, Larry Summers is saying we need to make sure we don't pull the rug out from under the recovery, and you still have Republicans not listening, that scares me. Because once they pull that rug out, once that safety net goes away, as tattered, as torn, as riddled with gaps as it is, where people like Ike fall through the system, when they pull that, even that away, there will be much more suffering, and we will continue downward. And all that we've done, everything that we've done to get out of this mess, will be immediately undone. And we'll be in much worse shape than we were before. And there's part of me believes that that's what they want. They never waste a good crisis. They never see an opportunity. You know, disaster capitalism, that's how money will be made. We can't start wars. We can't have those big wars like we used to. So we need to destroy communities. We need to destroy the environment. We need to destroy our country because we can make profit. It's all about the profit, isn't it? Anyway, I want to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about this piece that was in the New York Times today by Nicholas Kristof, Our Lefty Military. And it's a position I've taken for some time. We'll talk about it when we come back. Right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
If some predator was stalking fourth graders in your community, there'd be a mighty uproar to make the predator get away and stay away from your schools. But what if the stalker is the coal industry, dressed in an academic outfit and a gambit to brainwash fourth grade school kids? Unbeknownst to most Americans, grade schoolers are being targeted by the American Coal Foundation with a propaganda package stealthily titled, The United States of Energy. It's not mentioned in the materials, but Big Coal paid big bucks to Scholastic Inc. to develop this shamelessly distorted promotion of the dirtiest fuel on Earth. The package fills little minds with the joys of having 600 friendly coal-fueled utilities generating electricity 24 hours a day. Not a peep is made about the toxic waste, air and water pollution, mine explosions, black lung deaths, mountaintop destruction, greenhouse gas emissions, political corruption, and other decidedly unfriendly aspects of what industry propagandists simply tout as black gold. This educational package has been distributed to 150,000 fourth grade teachers, potentially putting its perverted view into the heads of more than a million children. Of course, the coal giants could not have entered so many schools on their own, so they bought access to our kids through Scholastic, a $2 billion a year corporation that places its materials in 90% of U.S. classrooms. Indeed, Scholastic's in-school marketing division brags of its ability to, quote, promote client objectives by targeting teachers and students with classroom packages that, quote, make a difference by influencing attitudes and behavior. This is Jim Hightower saying, how sweet. To help stop this kind of predatory marketing, contact the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, commercialfreechildhood.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome to the
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Nicholas Kristof wrote an interesting piece over at the New York Times titled Our Lefty Military. He says, as we search for paths out of America's economic crisis, many suggest business as a paradigm for cost-cutting. According to my back-of-the-envelope math, he writes, top CEOs earn as much money in 1 second around the clock, partly because they are cutting medical benefits for their employees. So they must be paragons of efficiency, right? Actually, he says, I'm not so sure. The business sector is dazzlingly productive, but it also periodically blows out our financial system. Yet if we seek another model, one that emphasizes universal health care and educational opportunity, one that seeks to curb income inequality, we don't have to turn to Sweden, rather look to the United States military. And, you know, I've said this for the longest time. In the U.S. military, you get health care, you get child care, you get all of these things, a 10-to-1 ratio from what I've seen. That, you know, the general makes 10 times what the lowly private makes. You look in the private sector, CEOs make 300 to 500. Last night, we talked about the big CEOs of the banks on Wall Street making 550 times what the average worker makes. He points this out, though. You know, CEOs at major companies make 3 times as much as the people cleaning their office. But in the military, the general, the guy at the top, the CEO, the head hog, he only makes 10 times what the guy cleaning his office makes, and that's important. You look at what Wesley Clark says, and he points this out in the article. It's the purest application of socialism that there is, because you make sure that everyone's taken care of. And what I find amazing, and he points this out, because business should take a lead from the military. Everyone loves to, you know, say how wonderful the military is. Oh, we love the military. Yeah, big arms. But the reality is what happens is you get the military who invests in their workers. They invest in the people that are there. Corporations, they don't do that. They're set up on the same hierarchy. You know, the same basic, you know, the same basic hierarchy that you have a boss and you have little underlings who have to do what they're told. And it's the same in the military. But instead, what you see is you see in the military where they actually make sure that everyone does all right. Everyone's got health care. Everyone's got a pension. Everyone has somewhere to live. And I would think that, you know, I would think private corporations would have something to think about there. And they spend an awful lot, an inordinately high amount of money investing in human capital. I mean, you look at the Army War College in Carlisle, you look at the Navy War College, the Air War College, where you give your people an opportunity to get ahead. And I find it very interesting. That while on one side of our mouth we talk about how wonderful the military is, but we don't want to model anything that they do. And it's kind of amazing to me that we have a society that would allow someone like Ike to die in the street, like the people who were wheeling through the halls of the Capitol yesterday and today, who the governor wants to steal help from. Who are saying that if we're going to die, we're going to die in the streets. We're going to die where you can see us. What happened to us? What happened to we? You know, when I played football, or I played a lot of sports, it was all about the team. It was about us. It was about we. No I in the word team, they used to say. But yet, as a nation, we're told constantly, we're individuals, we're consumers. You know, best deal for me. Kind of makes me wonder. Kind of makes me wonder if the social engineers don't have another plan in mind, which is to keep us divided and to keep us conquered. Kind of makes you think, Jake. And I, as I look at this, the more frustrated I get with it, the more passionate I am about moving us in the right direction.
Well, you look at Ike and you look at the people that have protested in the Capitol. That goes to the basic question. As a nation, do we believe it's important to take care of those who are truly at risk, certainly the seniors and children, but also those people like Ike? That goes to the very soul of this nation. Are we really starting to lose our soul? And we look at other, and it gets a little deep here, and you can say I'm full of it, but you know what? You look at other great civilizations, and they decayed from within. They decayed from within, and eventually the people rebelled against a system that didn't work, and that's exactly what's going to happen if it goes too far.
What they say about Rome, orgies and vomitoriums basically brought the country down because you had the handfuls consuming the mass of the wealth, just like we're at now. I mean, how many people are struggling to make ends meet? How many people are like our friend Ike, who can't go to the hospital or won't because they're proud? And they go, well, you know, I'll get better tomorrow. I'll get better tomorrow. It'll stop tomorrow. It'll heal itself tomorrow. And then you find down the line, oh, this is something that could have been fixed, and now it's too late. And not only is it too late, but it's going to cost society considerably more because we didn't do a little bit of prevention. Last couple of nights, we talked to a couple of state senators, Blake and Farnese, here in the state of Pennsylvania, who are saying, you know what? The governor wants to chop out this money going to medical schools, wants to chop out this money going to cancer centers. It's a small amount of money. The guy said less than somewhere around $1 million, so that people can get colon screenings and people can get preventative care, so that, you know what, we catch cancer early. And he wants to slash that out. What message does that send? And from a fiscally responsible, and I reach out to my fiscal conservative friends and ask them, do you change the oil in your car? Do you go to the doctor yearly and get a blood test a very cheap blood test to make sure everything's okay? Do you go get a vision test every once in a while to make sure your eyes are okay? And if you tell me no, I don't know how you can consider yourself fiscally conservative, because you're putting problems off down the road. And as this guy points out in the article, the military invests a lot of money in education. Look what we're talking about doing in the state of Pennsylvania. Cutting $1 billion from K through 12 education, cutting the higher education budget by 56%. Explain to me how that's a good thing. Explain to me how that's investing in human capital. And then we complain about, well, we just can't attract the businesses anymore. We just can't attract good companies here because you don't have an educated workforce. The state of Massachusetts per capita, and I found this to be amazing because they keep saying Texas created more jobs. Well, Texas is a much bigger state, has many more people. So by pure number, yeah, they created more jobs as a pure number. But Massachusetts per capita has created more jobs than anyone. And how did they do it? On a completely different model. That's where Texas is deregulating. Texas is slashing taxes. Texas is saying, you know what, business? Whatever you want there, brother, it's yours. And they're creating some low-income jobs. Up in Massachusetts, they're saying, well, we're not going to deregulate. We're not going to cut taxes. In fact, we're going to charge you for an educated workforce. We're going to have a decent infrastructure. And we're going to have a regulatory system that levels the playing field for everybody. And they're creating jobs, more per capita than Texas. But we don't want to talk about that because it doesn't fit the right-wing frame. And the right-wing frame is always cut taxes, deregulate. I mean, it's like you pull a string and they just spew it out. Like one of those little dolls when you were a kid, over and over and over again. It's like no thought, no brain required, just regurgitation constantly. And that's where they want to take our education system. We want kids at the regurgitation level. We don't want them to think critically. We just want them to spew facts and spew what we want them to spew. What it is we put in those empty vessels called brains. And they will spew what we want them to spew. And they will believe what we want them to believe. And we will rewrite history. And we'll do all of that. And they will believe because we have told. That's the direction we're going. And it's scary. My generation and older question authority. Always ask questions. I grew up on the streets. You never took anything for face value. Never. What's that they say? Believe half of what you hear, believe none of what you hear and only half of what you see. That's the truth. Ask questions. But we're becoming a society that just follows along. And that scares me. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about oil prices a little bit. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at seiu668.org and join our human services campaign.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Ever check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Our friend Bernie Sanders introduced legislation yesterday aimed at combating the negative impacts of Wall Street on the price of gas, because what we've got is we've got a bunch of oil speculators who are lining their pockets, if you will, because they can. The system is set up to where, you know what? It's a speculative thing, and you know what? As much money as they can take from it, they're going to. And Sanders said, you know, basically what's going on is you've got these handful of people who are ripping the American people off. The energy futures market, he said, has gone up 50% in the last 10 years. 50% in the last 10 years. So you think about the cost of gas at the pump and how much of that you're putting in, how much of that is going out of your pocket into theirs. Massive transfer of wealth. I mean, you stop and think about it. It's staggering. It is really staggering how much wealth has been stolen from the American working class. When you look at this oil monopoly where you have to put gas in your car, you need oil to fuel your, to heat your home. And then the other part where they basically stole all the equity from your home. I mean, this whole housing collapse has robbed trillions of dollars from the American working class. And I say it was done by design. You know, the radical right will love to say, well, it was that community future, that was that Redevelopment Act, yeah, it was that CRA thing that Carter passed. Yeah, it was Carter's fault. When the reality is we know that's not what it was. Maybe a little tiny bit of it, maybe very, very little bit of it. You know, heaven forbid that we let those minorities own those cheap homes that they're living in, that they're paying high rent on. This whole thing was a jobs crisis. You know, most of the houses that I see that are empty, very upper middle class, a couple hundred thousand dollars. All that was done by design. They figured out how to get you to buy something that you were going to pay on for 4, 5, 6, 10 years. And then the system collapsed. And guess what happened? They not only took your 5, 6, 10 years worth of payments, they also took back the house and all of the equity that went with it. You know, like I talked about the other night, I still think about the kid who bought my house when I lived in Allentown. 2001, paid $140,000 for it. 2005, right at the beginning of 2005, end of 2004, $190,000 I sold it for. In those 3.5, 4 years, the value of that house did not go up $50,000. Other than through this frenzy. They were just, the appraisers came by, didn't even come by. They, oh yeah, that's worth that. They were all in on it, the real estate agents, the appraisers, the loan writers. They bundled these things up. They sold it to people in Saudi Arabia. They sold it to people all around the world. Just loaded the globe with these toxic assets. because they bundled them up, and oh boy, we have a AAA rated thing here. And then when it all collapsed, they took back your house, and they had all those years of payments. And understand how a mortgage works, and most people don't. First 5 years, you pay back a good portion of the interest. You pay a good portion of that money back within the first 5 years because they're charging you the most interest right up front. As the years go by, the interest goes down and you begin to pay principal. But those first 5 years, when they want you jumping around, they want you out of it. They got you. So think about this massive transfer of wealth. All of this money that you've been working for that they figured out how to get out of you. These aren't dumb people. They figured this game out. And they're sticking it to you. Not only are they sticking it to you, you look at OPEC, the cartel over there who made $1 trillion for the first time. $1 trillion. That's double what they were profiting from just 30 years ago. Double. So you look at all this and you go, well, what happened? Well, what happened is the smart people in the room figured this game out. And the rich people like the Koch brothers figured it out as well, and they got their tentacles in it as well, and they've got their front groups out there like Americans for Prosperity shilling for them. You know, it's not, out there trying to convince you and me. It's not the oil companies. No. Oil companies are good. They need their subsidies. You got Republican politicians, same thing. And we're coming near the one year anniversary of Joe Barton apologizing to BP. Do you remember that? Remember Joe apologizing? Remember the whole testimony? You got the BP CEO Haywood sitting right there in front of Joe Barton. He says,
I'm speaking this totally for myself. I'm not speaking for the Republican Party. I'm not speaking for anybody in the House of Representatives but myself. But I'm ashamed of what happened in the White House yesterday. I think it is a tragedy of the first proportion that a private corporation can be subjected to what I would characterize as a shakedown. In this case, a $20 billion shakedown.
Do you know what he's calling a shakedown? Remember that massive gusher? Remember that massive spill in the Gulf? Remember all the damage that was done? Remember all the lives that were uprooted? Remember all the pain and suffering and loss of economic activity and loss of jobs and loss of careers and loss of homes? Remember all of that? Well, we had a guy in the White House who said, you know what? You guys are paying for this mess. You did it. You're paying for it. You're going to put money aside, and you're going to pay for it. And you got Barton who's saying, oh, I'm sorry, that was a shakedown.
With the Attorney General of the United States, who is legitimately conducting a criminal investigation and has every right to do so to protect the interests of the American people, participating in what amounts to a $20 billion slush fund that's unprecedented in our nation's history, that's got no legal standing, and which sets, I think, a terrible precedent for the future.
A terrible precedent. And you know what that terrible precedent was? That a corporation that causes massive damage, a corporation that causes massive pain, a corporation that destroys people's lives and harms the livelihoods and the existence and the health of the American people, that they should be required to pay for the damages. That's the terrible thing. That was it. He goes on to say,
if I called you into my office and I had the subcommittee chairman, Mr. Stupak, with me, who was legitimately conducting an oversight investigation on your company, and said, if you put so many millions of dollars in a project in my congressional district, I could go to jail and should go to jail.
Two very different things. And again, I love how they conflate these things. The reality is you look at the damage that BP did, and you got to give the president credit on this. He said, look, you're going to fix this mess. You're going to clean it up. And you got people like Joe Barton, this big conservative Republican, on his hands and knees basically groveling,
But we have a due process system where we go through hearings, in some cases court cases, litigation, and determine what those damages are and when those damages should be paid. So I'm only speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for anybody else, but I apologize. I do not want to live in a country where any time a citizen or a corporation does something that is legitimately wrong is subject to some sort of political pressure that is, again, in my words, amounts to a shakedown. So I apologize.
He apologized. He's on his hands and knees. You know, why you should be able to go through the court system and tie things up for a generation. Remember the Exxon Valdez? Those cases still are not settled. Still to this day, those people are not whole. That was 1989. And that's what he's apologizing for, that the president stood up for the American people. And yet, you know, almost nobody, and I remember making this argument a year ago when this was going on, almost nobody took that position. You know, he looked like a weakling. He looked like the putz that he is. But at the end of the day, most people said, yeah, well, yeah, they should be able to go to court and tie things up for a generation, like the Exxon Valdez did. So there he was, on his hands and knees. Remember that? Well, now I've just played it for you. And what bothers me about this whole speculation thing is you've got this bill on the House floor that's going to slash next year's funding for the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. So the people who are overseeing this stuff, the people who are in charge of making sure that the speculators don't get out of hand, their budget has been cut by a whopping 44%. And again, I ask you, how are they going to do their jobs with no people there? And this is what the Republicans want. This is deregulation world, folks. This is deregulation world. This is the kind of stuff that goes on. And what I find interesting, you know, is some of the statistics that I've come across, almost 68 cents out of every gallon of gas, they're saying is because of speculation. You got the guy, Rex Tillerson, the guy, the CEO of ExxonMobil, who said, you know, oil should be about 60 bucks a barrel. Oil speculators have doubled their share of oil futures in the market. Doubled since 1990. They now have 68% of speculators to 32% of users of oil. I mean, stop and think about how much that is. Nearly 90% of all oil trade betting is on it going up. 90%. So what do you think is going to happen? It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Up, 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 and up. And you got the Koch brothers. One of those people out there with the oil derivatives invented by the Koch brothers industries. You know, the same people who are bankrolling Americans for prosperity. The same people who are saying, don't blame the oil companies. The same people pushing for more deregulation, more speculation. Because it's the free market, remember? They keep telling us it's the free market. The free market should decide. What happens when you get people like this who are manipulating the free market? This is not a supply and demand thing. I can understand back in the 70s when you'd pull up to a gas pump and they'd say, sorry, out of gas. No supply. I can understand the price going up then. I've yet to see that happen in this country. I've yet to see a report. Yet to see one report. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Gene Friday from the Alliance for Retired Americans. Right back after this. In your automobile.
Smith Show, changing America for the better. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Battle of Blair Mountain was commemorated recently by a 50-mile march and rally in West Virginia. That battle was the largest armed confrontation in U.S. history between workers and corporate gun thugs.
Solidarity forever.
As marchers set off on the five-day trek to Blair Mountain, a retired miner proudly held aloft a sign representing United Mine Workers of America, Local 1440. Its 1,200 members endorsed the march and rally to save a critical piece of labor history. The battlefield along the mountain ridge is where, in 1921, thousands of miners fighting for the right to join the union confronted coal company security forces and county sheriffs allied with the coal barons. Although national UMWA leaders support preserving the battlefield, they did not endorse the march. Chuck Keeney is the great-grandson of Frank Keeney, a mine workers' leader from 1917 to 1924, who was at the Battle of Blair Mountain. He says the miners' fight for collective bargaining rights, which was not won until more than a decade after the battle, was a key demand.
This is where people laid the groundwork for an American middle class, you know, for weekends, for 40-hour work weeks. And if you think labor organizations aren't important now, look at Wisconsin, look at Michigan, look at all of the things that's happening. These issues are incredibly important, and Blair Mountain is a place where people can rally to that and see that labor is something that's vitally important to the economic prosperity of the United States.
On Blair Mountain, West Virginia, I'm Melinda Tuhus, reporting for Workers Independent News.
As WIN's Lauren Schmidt reports, there's a people's alternative to the Republican take from the workers to give to the rich Wisconsin state budget. The People's Rights Campaign and the Labor Community Network marched to Department of Administration Secretary Mike Hipsch's office to demand accessibility to their house, decrying Hipsch as a public menace for crushing the public's right to assemble.
The campaign delivered their demands that DOA secretaries stop the attacks and open the Capitol.
We're a part of the People's Rights Campaign, which is really talking about putting forward an alternative agenda, that we reject this budget and that cuts are the only answers. Cuts are not the answers to the budget crisis. We need to look at making sure the corporations and the rich are paying their fair share. Woo! And we need to talk about expanding education, making sure there's good jobs, providing health care for people in this really difficult time. They're taking Wisconsin in the wrong direction, and we're looking at really turning things around and making sure that we put forward our own agenda that's about people and people's rights and not about profits for corporations and Wall Street.
How do you solve a deficit? Tax, tax, tax the rich!
Pacifica Radio called it riveting. Get your copy of WIN's one-hour documentary, This Is What Democracy Looks Like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, I think about this often, and this voter ID bill, again, another one of these across the country, with its sole intention to take away rights from voters. And I go back to my grandmother, and I think about her often in this. She's 84 years old. She has not driven a car in probably about 10 years. She has no way to get downtown to the place where they give out state IDs. She has no way to get to these places. So what you're basically doing is you're making sure she never gets to vote. Because in the community where she lives, there's a bus that comes by, picks up people, taking them to the voting polls. But there's not a bus that's going to come by and take her down to get an ID. Are we talking about doing that? This bill doesn't. That's why I've asked Gene Friday, president of the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans, to come talk to us a little bit. Their website, penretiredamericans.org. Gene, thanks for taking time for us.
Why, thank you very much. This is a very important issue to Pennsylvanians.
It's hugely important because, you know, as I've been saying, the Republicans understand they're outnumbered. And the only way they can consistently win is if they make sure that seniors can't vote, the poor can't vote, and minorities can't vote. And they're working to do that.
Well, I think they also know that seniors are very, very mad at them right now. Just look at what happened when the Ryan plan was introduced in Washington and Paul Ryan went home to see his constituents. They were furious with him. So they know that seniors are going to be very mad, and they have a pretty good idea of how they're going to vote this year.
Yeah, at least I'm hoping that's how they're going to vote. That is if they can't figure out how to kick you off the rolls.
Oh, no, that is our big concern. That's obviously what we're going to have to face. In Pennsylvania, I think 15.1% of our residents are seniors. The average, U.S. average is 12.4. But there's currently more than 1,883 seniors in Pennsylvania. We have to get them out there to get their vote in this year.
Especially when you look at the attacks that are going on, the Social Security and Medicare, and you look at the attacks going on to in-home health care aides coming and helping people stay in their homes, and all of these budget and these priorities that our governor seems to be wrong on. We need people who are going to step forward and say, you know what, we tried this, it's not working, let's head in a different direction.
No, I agree with you. I had some good news tonight. I was very pleased listening to TV that there's a Republican revolution going on in Washington, that a lot of the Republicans are saying no to Grover Norquist's pledge to not raise taxes. They're actually going to start to raise taxes and not put it on the backs of the middle class.
Well, I mean, that's finally a step in the right direction.
You got that right.
Well, because I think most people never heard of Grover Norquist. Even though he's a guy who really honestly and truthfully hates this country, and when I play this clip for people.
I want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
They say, this guy's an American? This is the guy who we want influencing our politicians?
Right.
And to a member, the answer is no.
Right. Well, and you know, I think it's wonderful because it just came out that Governor Corbett had signed the pledge with Grover Norquist. So I'd like to see what he's going to do now. Maybe he'll spend some of that extra tax money he got. But let's get back to the voter ID. It is a very crucial thing for a lot of our seniors. I'm also president of the Steelworkers Organization of Active Retirees at the Clark and Coke Works. And I can probably beat your mom by a little. I have a lady there who is 100 and a half right now.
Wow.
Yes.
Good for her.
Oh, she's wonderful. She's our inspiration. She has a great mind. She only takes a little blood pressure pill. Her health is very, very good. But last year she was still driving and she had an accident. She ran into a curb and damaged her car. So they took her license away from her. And we are going to make sure that this lady gets set up, that she has a valid ID, and she gets to get her vote in this year, because that's been she was very involved in politics with some of our local politicians.
She's 100 and a half years old.
100 and a half. She's wonderful.
She's probably been going to the same voting poll since it was built.
Exactly.
And now they're going to say, sorry, we don't recognize you.
Exactly. Well, we're going to make sure that they do recognize her. That would break her heart to have that taken away from her.
Well, I mean, I think it would do more than break her heart. I think this is something that would break all of our hearts, because at the end of the day, voting is one of those things, even though we don't do it enough in this country, that is our birthright.
You really made a good point there. I learned recently, a representative from Philadelphia was telling that in the primary election, only 17% of the people voted. I think we really need to reach out to those 83% that are out there that are depending on having these social safety nets that are so important to their future. We're going to have to try that approach, too, and actually try to get more people to participate.
So let me ask you this. Instead of, you know, and I've been an advocate of opening up voting. So instead of doing what the Republicans want to do, which is restrict your access, the access of minorities and other people, especially the working poor, restrict their access to the ballot box, I say, why can't we expand it? Why can't we have same-day registration? Why can't we have weekend voting? Why can't we do a Friday through Tuesday vote to make sure more people have the opportunity to get to the polls and to participate in their government?
I agree 100% with you. In this busy life, you have to try to accommodate people.
You know, just 14 hours on a Tuesday, that's all I've got? That's how I'm going to participate? The answer should be no.
I agree with you.
So walk me through this. What is this bill that I think Daryl Metcalf has put forth?
Yes, he probably introduced it about the 1st of June. He's the House State Government Chairman, and he introduced it demanding that we have a valid state or a federal photo ID for every citizen before they're permitted to vote. This is a major problem for citizens who are not drivers and who don't have driver's licenses. The voters most likely to be affected are senior citizens, city dwellers who use public transit, people of color, people with disabilities, and young people, especially college students.
What do you say to someone like me who, you know, I'm in my 40s, I go to work every day, you know, I got a driver's license, and I go, you know what, it's not that big of a deal to me. I can reach in my wallet, I can pull out my driver's license.
Right.
It's not that big of a thing.
Right.
What's the response?
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly with you. I said it's a minor nuisance, but, you know, that is no problem for us. But for the seniors to go through the process to have to, you know, figure out where they can get a state ID. And as you said, they are no longer driving. What if they don't have access to a bus? How are they going to get there?
Yep.
So, this is going to have to be a major project that we're going to have to get into. One of the things that really hit me recently, in Pittsburgh, we have some steelworker high-rise towers. There's four that are scattered throughout the Pittsburgh area. And I've been there. I've visited the people. And I know some who have been there for years. I go in and I talk about Medicare, Social Security, answer any of their questions about how to get their drugs. And when I woke up, I realized that very few of these people in those buildings are going to have driver's license. They depend on a little bus that takes them from their facility to do their shopping or to take them to the doctor. So we're sitting there with probably 600 to 700 people in these four buildings that we're going to have to do a lot of work to make sure they get out there.
So,
but again, I look at our area. I live in Belle Vernon, which is south of Pittsburgh,
right.
And every little town down here has a senior center. We have personal care homes. We have assisted living. We have long-term care. We have retirement communities with continuous care. You know, all of these people are going to probably be affected by this.
So let me ask you this. A, what are the chances of this passing and becoming law? And B, what is it that your group wants? I got to be honest. I think the system works fine just the way it is. I think we're spending an awful lot of time, an awful lot of energy, and a lot of money on a problem that no one has been able to demonstrate to me actually exists.
Exactly. No, exactly. That is exactly what it is. There is no proven problem. I think they've had some errors. Maybe someone has entered something the wrong way, but no actual fraud.
So what is it that the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans want people to know about House Bill 934? What should people be doing? What advice would you get?
They should be calling their representatives right now and telling them that they do not want that to be initiated in Pennsylvania. I would encourage everyone to do it because there's a vote on it. It'll probably be voted on before the end of the month. And I'd just like to see everyone tell people how terrible this is. I have harassed my representative so much that he sent me a list of what all he is against, and he's definitely against the voter ID. I have it in writing from him.
Good. Instead of doing that, maybe we should be, working on getting people jobs. Instead of wasting all this time on this divisive stuff, maybe we should talk about how are we going to make sure that the kids of this generation have opportunities in the future so that the education system in this state doesn't crumble like we've allowed the infrastructure. That would be a good place to start instead of doing this, don't you think?
We have to do something with jobs. I have an article telling where from 16 to 24 there are 6 million people in our 6 million young people in our country who haven't even had a job yet. I mean, they're going to be so discouraged. You know, we lived coming out of school and going out and finding a job, and if we didn't like it, we could find another one. This is just criminal what's happening to our young people. So I think we're going to start to move in that direction. There's a lot of people calling for jobs.
So are you seeing the same thing that I am, this divide and conquer mentality, this if we can keep granny pitted against, the college kid? Because, Social Security is not going to be there for you, kid. Pull it back from Granny.
Well, I'll tell you what, Granny's really worried about those grandkids. most of our seniors, that is the real thing that we talk about. Are our children going to have the same kind of life we had? What is going to happen to our kids? How do they go to college and decide what to take in college when they don't even know if there's jobs out there for them? We've got to get this country back in the direction that, you know, we live the American dream, and we want our kids to have the American dream.
And that's why we got to fight to make sure that my grandmother can go to the voting polls and have her vote counted.
You bet. No, definitely.
Gene Friday, I appreciate your time. President of the Pennsylvania Alliance for Retired Americans. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Rick Smith.
If some predator was stalking fourth graders in your community, there'd be a mighty uproar to make the predator get away and stay away from your schools. But what if the stalker is the coal industry, dressed in an academic outfit in a gambit to brainwash fourth grade school kids? Unbeknownst to most Americans, grade schoolers are being targeted by the American Coal Foundation with a propaganda package stealthily titled The United States of Energy. It's not mentioned in the materials, but Big Coal paid big bucks to Scholastic Inc. to develop the shamelessly distorted promotion of the dirtiest fuel on Earth. The package fills little minds with the joys of having 600 friendly coal-fueled utilities generating electricity 24 hours a day. Not a peep is made about the toxic waste, air and water pollution, mine explosions, black lung deaths, mountaintop destruction, greenhouse gas emissions, political corruption, and other decidedly unfriendly aspects of what industry propagandists simply tout as black gold. This educational package has been distributed to 150,000 fourth grade teachers, potentially putting its perverted view into the heads of more than a million children. Of course, the coal giants could not have entered so many schools on their own, so they bought access to our kids through Scholastic, a $2 billion a year corporation that places its materials in 90% of U.S. classrooms. Indeed, Scholastic's in-school marketing division brags of its ability to, quote, promote client objectives by targeting teachers and students with classroom packages that, quote, make a difference by influencing attitudes and behavior. This is Jim Hightower saying, how sweet. To help stop this kind of predatory marketing, contact the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, commercialfreechildhood.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Tweet of the day comes from CMRPA, who writes, 91-year-old mother doesn't have a photo ID. She turned her driver's license in and now is more or less housebound. Damn GOP. And, yeah, I'm right there with you. Right there with you. You know, I stop and I think about this stuff. What happens when I get to be that age? You know, it's easy now. It's easy now. Say I'm healthy, I'm able-bodied, I can go put up with this, I can go do this kind of stuff. What happens when you're housebound like my grandmother or like this 91-year-old woman?
Well, let's be honest, Rick. What the Republicans are counting on is that in some districts, they might be able to shave 5, 6, 7% of the vote off and be able to steal a couple elections. It's all about power. And you're exactly right. Instead, we should be expanding the opportunities for people to vote. And what are we doing? We're going the exact opposite.
Well, again, there's so many things that we should be doing with voting. I mean, it should be a Friday morning through Tuesday night thing. It should be a week long. You should be able to go to the polls and cast your ballot. Should be that simple. But we want to seem to restrict it to just a couple hours on a Tuesday. And we want to make, oh, you got to have deadlines. And no, do you have the right to vote or don't you? You know, again, if you catch people, you know, cheating the system, you deal with them. But I haven't seen that this is a major problem. No one's shown me cases of this being a real problem. What I have seen, I've seen people like Ann Coulter living somewhere else, voting in a different state. People like Mitt Romney living in California, voting in Massachusetts. We've seen that. Never see them prosecuted, but we've seen that. What would a voter, what would a photo ID do to change that? Nothing. And there's a lot of things with the vote I would like to see. I'd like to see our elections changed a little bit. I'd love to see instant runoff voting. Would love to see it. I would love to see that because we could use a third party to push the agenda, or a fourth or a fifth to push the agenda, to push some different policies. So we can have real choice instead of bad and worse. Because that's what it's come down to the last several elections. You got somebody who's pretty bad, and you got somebody who's just worse. So you're voting for the lesser of two evils. I mean, I can't think of an election where that really hasn't happened. I mean, I said back when I voted for Obama, I actually voted for him. It wasn't that I was voting against John McCain. But at every other election of my lifetime, that's how it's been. I voted for Bill Clinton. Why? I didn't want H.W. Bush. Voted for Clinton again. Why? Didn't want Dole. Voted for Al Gore. Wasn't a huge Al Gore fan. Voted for him because I didn't want the shrub. Kerry was no winner. But I voted for him because really didn't want the shrub. That's why we should be expanding voting.
Well, the truth is, Rick, there are a few bright spots in the country. There are a couple states of Oregon. I believe your home state in Ohio has some early voting periods. Those are excellent things. But at the end of the day, we need to, and again, on this issue, I don't hear the Democrats, you know, articulating to the American people, look, they're trying to take your right to vote away. I don't see the Democrats doing a good job out there. This is, to me, is a major issue. It goes to the heart. If we're going to limit the right of people to elect those who represent them, do we really truly have a representative democracy in the true sense of the word? I think not.
I think not as well. You look over at the Capitol today, the last couple of days, in fact, you've seen this group adapt. Who have been wheeling in their wheelchairs, coming in, protesting the governor's budget. Because what they're doing, what's going on, these folks understand this. They're basically stealing away their lives. And we had this woman, Cassie James, on the program. She's the policy director of Liberty Resources. She's the one, you know, out there kind of with this group pushing, making noise, saying, hey, your policies are going to kill us. And we're not going to go silently into the good night. We're going to come to the Capitol. We're going to raise Cain. We're going to make sure people see and hear us. And if you remember the other night, the news media was out there, and as soon as they left, the Capitol area police cited several of them who refused to leave because they were camping out. And then I loved how they kind of pulled it back. Well, you know, since they were so clean and they were, they weren't causing any real trouble. Well, you know, as long as they'll go, we'll rip up the citation. And I'm going, what? What are you talking about? These people, if it were me, you'd have to drag me off that spot. And these folks are in the worst possible shape. These are people who can't, will never get out of that chair. But they live independently with a little bit of help. And that little bit of help being taken away. And she, you know, this, you know, some of the people were saying, look, if you cut this little bit of help, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? I'm indigent. I'm broke. I don't have a job. I don't have all the stuff that, you know, that most people can deal with. I'm going to end up in a state facility. It's going to end up costing a boatload more money. Again, that whole failure to see beyond the tip of their nose. where this little bit of help we're giving them to stay in their homes costs a little bit here. But if we take that away, we're going to end up putting them in nursing homes, and that's going to cost us 10 times as much down the road. But don't want to talk about that. So these people have been, you know, they've been wheeling through the halls, letting people know that they're there, and God bless them. But what I found interesting is you look at the, you know, like the Penn Live site where the story was up and some of the comments that are there. And you go, really? You people are this sadistic? You people are this rude? One of the people, 70 times 70, wrote, they need psychiatric help on your dime. Ha ha, joke's on us. Really? These people's bodies are broken and disfigured and maimed, and they're never going to lead a quality life. And you're going to make jokes at their expense? Miss Ramon, she wrote, I don't disagree with their protest, but if the law states camping in the area is prohibited, then why is this incident an exception? And they go, no, it's not that it's an exception, you dimwit. That's our house. Any person should be able to go there and raise Cain. You look at what happened in Wisconsin. They didn't cite people. 150,000 people showed up. They didn't cite them because people were standing together. You got these poor folks who are in these chairs, and you don't have people standing with them. You got people like these folks. This other woman saying, well, you know, they're annoying. They make noise. And they're loud and disruptive and rude. Do you not get that they think that they're being killed? Do you not get that? I mean, their life is on the line here. What would you do if your life was on the line? How would you fight? And that's what I see in this. These people, they don't have the fortune that you and I have. So they've been in the Capitol raising Cain. They're trying to meet with the governor. Governor won't give any time to them. And you get the governor's spokesperson saying, oh, gee, well, you know, they just want to protest. They don't really want to meet. Somebody needs to smack him in the back of the head.
Make a citizen out of him.
Well, yeah.
But Rick, you don't understand. I mean, they want our tax dollars. That's the message of the conservatives. They appeal to the darker side of humankind. And I hear this. I know you don't listen to the local talk show, but I love to listen to the conservative nitwits, and many of them are nitwits who don't use half the brains that God gave them. And you hear that constant message, it's about me, 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 and my pocket. Not only are they greedy, they really don't understand the issues, and they really don't understand that this administration has a lot of ways to raise capital if they so choose, but they've decided to side with their corporate masters.
And Grover, got to take the anti-tax pledge. Got to take the pledge, because that's all they seem to know. And while we're being the rugged individuals, interesting piece in the Washington Post points out that life expectancy in this country, big surprise, varies by region and varies widely by region. And in some places actually going down. And you go, well, gee, where could that be? Where's the common sense going to take us? Wealthy areas living longer, poverty-ridden areas living shorter, people living less quality of lives because of the income that they're able to muster. In this country, no job means no health insurance. No health insurance means less health. Less health care. Less of, you know, I'm passing blood. I'm passing tissue. I've got chest pains, but I don't have the money to go to the doctor. So it gets worse, and it gets worse. Whereas someone like me or someone in my neighborhood goes, you know what, I just passed blood. I better go to the doctor now. Lives a little bit longer. Because we've made health care in this country a defining line between those who are in the middle and upper class and those who live in poverty. You cannot possibly be in the middle class without health care. It is impossible. Yet I've got people every day who, well, I'm solidly middle class, me and my $18,000 a year or $20,000 a year, because I don't take anything from that government. I don't want that stinking health care. And you just shake your head. How'd you get to that point? You look at the reality. The reality is life expectancy for many of the minority groups, especially black men, gone down. You look at the fact that in poorer states, West Virginia, southern Appalachian Mountains, deep into the south, into North Texas, people live shorter lives. Why? Less access to health care. And, you know, I go back to that fight over the health care bill. In the states, and there's part of me, and I've kind of come back around a little bit. I've kind of come back around to maybe we don't need health care reform because I have health care right now. Maybe we don't need it because the people who fought it so vehemently, the people who are so staunchly opposed to it, are the exact people it's meant to help. You go and you look at all the southern states, all of the senators and congressmen who voted against it are the exact places where it's needed the most. The exact place where this article points out where life expectancy is less. Infant mortality is higher. Yet we just not getting it. They give the example of Naples, Florida. Collier County, Florida. The average life expectancy there, 86 years old. And then you go to Holmes County, Mississippi, where life expectancy is 73 years old. 13-year difference just based on where you live and how much money you're worth. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You've reached Jenny in the Accounts Receivable Department of Dent Supply International. I can't come to the phone right now. Please leave a message, and I'll return your call as soon as I'm available.
Jenny was in constant pain and missing too much work.
I wasn't reliable. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't be what I wanted to be. I knew that I could do my job better. I knew that I could be a better mom. I could be a better wife. But my body wasn't letting me.
Fortunately, Jenny's employer has Capital Blue Cross. And Capital gave Jenny a whole set of services called Better Health Works. Jenny filled out a profile, got online coaching, and called a nurse line.
She talked me out of a very dark time because I didn't know what else to do. Since I had my surgery, now I can give my employer and my family 110% of me.
Capital's Amy Montgomery is happy that Jenny is happy.
It feels great that Capital Blue Cross was able to help Jenny this way.
We really believe in what we do, and I think that that's one of the things that makes us successful. I think it's a perfect example of when you care more, you do more.
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Watch the greenbacks tumble. Feel the stallion crumble.
Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Today, back in 1918, the railroad union leader and socialist Eugene V. Debs spoke in Canton, Ohio. Talked about the relationship between capitalism and war. Kind of pretty much laying out the same thing that Smedley Butler put out there. War is a racket where rich people get rich and poor people, well, they get dead. But there's profit to be made, and lots of it. And the very well-to-do, they line their pockets with nice contracts from the government, and it's all such a nice, cozy relationship with nice cost overruns. Look, during the Bush years, cost-plus contracts. Where else can you get something like that? Remember, these are the fiscal hawks. These are the conservative people. Cost-plus contracts. As much as it costs you to produce, plus a percentage for you to line your pockets with. Cost-plus. No-bid contracts. Cost-plus no-bid contracts. These are the people who are talking about competition, free markets. Cost-plus no-bid contracts. Nothing free market about that. Nothing competitive about that. But the rhetoric that keeps coming out of that hole in the front of their face, when the gums keep flapping, it's free markets, baby. Just nuts. Also today in 1933, the National Industrial Recovery Act became law, established the rights of workers to unionize, set maximum hour and minimum wage laws for every major industry, abolished sweatshops, and abolished child labor. Today, 1933, that happened. Since then, the conservatives have been doing everything they can think of to do to undo all of that. Destroy the right to organize. Destroy those that overtime. Destroy the minimum wage. Want to go back to working 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you know what? Get those kids back into the sweatshops, too, because they got such nice little hands. They can do such nice, intricate work. You know, big old people like me with big hands, we can't do that needle, that little highly delicate needlework. Can't do it. But we can get those, you know, the 6-7-year-old kids. They can do it. Today, 1933, said, you know what? No more of that. And ever since, they've been fighting back. You know what else our good conservative friends have brought us? On this day, back in the year 2000, I love this one. One of my favorites. Inicom Corporation. They were once the world's largest computer dealer. They decided via email they were going to encourage all of their employees at a certain time to call a toll-free number. So you do like the good you know, corporate drone. You pick up the phone and you dial it. And the recorded message says, sorry, you're fired. Don't come into work today. Isn't that wonderful? Welcome. Welcome to America.
They probably thought they were going to get a big bonus.
Yeah, they got a big bonus.
They got a bonus, all right.
They got a 60% cut in their pay because they had to go collect unemployment, which only replaces about 40% with no health care, with no pension, with no sick days, no vacation. But hey, you know, that unemployment, those people are milking the system.
They got, you're number one.
You got the invisible hand.
Yep.
The invisible hand, the invisible fist used as a verb. Also today, some labor leaders not thrilled. A group of folks came and wrote a letter to the president saying, hey, you know, I'm not overly happy with this Colombian Free Trade Agreement. They called the president to delay the advancement of Colombia until the South American country can't protect its labor leaders. Rich Trumka said that 2,850 trade unionists have been killed in the last 25 years. He says Colombia is the most dangerous place in the world to be a union member. And I think of that, and I said, well, what would happen if we had a country that we wanted to do business with that killed off 2,850 CEOs? Do you think we'd be rushing to sign in? Do You think we'd be rushing right, or sign us right up? Do you think? I don't. George Miller of California, he said this is something that Congress can't ignore. And before we give American preference to another country for trade agreements, we need to ask, is this good for the American worker? Is this good for American values? And the answer is no. And the reality is you go down the line and you look at what's good for America, what's good for the country, is not always what's good for Wall Street. And what's good for Wall Street is not always what's good for this country. So when you see people lining their pockets, you know, I still think of my favorite CEO. You know, I'm kind of sick that way. I actually have a favorite CEO. Schatz Piscotty, my favorite CEO. You know why Schatz is my favorite guy, Jake? Because he made his money the old-fashioned way.
He stole it.
Got his hands dirty, dug in the dirt, built a ship, and shipped our jobs overseas. Made his money outsourcing jobs. So he took your ability to make a living away and took it somewhere else where they could profit off of it. And we know this. Yet we still got to talk about these trade agreements where we know that we're going to lose jobs. The Republicans are foaming at the mouth. We want Colombia. We want South Korea. We want Panama. We want a clean bill. We don't want any of that trade adjustment assistance for those workers. We don't care about them. We want it clean. We want to be able to get over there and open up those markets so that our financial firms can benefit and our agriculture can benefit. Understand, these trade agreements are about our agricultural industry. Some of the lowest paying jobs in the country. Those are the jobs we're willing to protect. Our manufacturing jobs, the ones that were good, solid paying union jobs with benefits and pensions. Well, we can move those. That dirty work can be done anywhere. Like China or India or Brazil. Yeah. So you look at the reality. The president, he's got this big commission. And, you know, I got to give him credit. He's maybe trying a little bit. He's got the Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. And who does he appoint to head this all up? The biggest outsourcer himself, Jeffrey Immelt, CEO of General Electric, who was asked, what do you see GE's future? Where do you see it? China, China, China. Also on this list, Citigroup, Intel, Procter & Gamble, DuPont, all companies that have been outsourcing jobs for years. And what I find interesting, in the 10 years from 1999 to 2009, the heart of the Bush years, we saw nearly 3 million American jobs leave this country. Gone. And at the same time, the companies who shut those factories down, the companies who took those jobs away, created some 2.5 million jobs overseas. One. I mean, think about this. Think about all the investment that's gone from this country there. And when they talk about the Bush tax cuts creating jobs, they're right. The Bush tax cut, it did.
With a robust package of at least $550 billion and across-the-board tax relief, we will help create more than 1 million new jobs.
And I'm sure it did create 1 million new jobs in China and in India, not here. Our problem is we're still hung up on the invisible man, on the invisible hand. But during that 10-year period, we lost almost 3 million jobs. 2.5 million of them moved overseas. Seven of the publicly traded companies represented on the council. Those people who were on the council, this big grand council on jobs and competitiveness. They spent almost $200 billion in the past 4 years investing overseas. $200 billion. And they blame us for not having a low enough tax rate. They blame us for not being deregulated enough. And I ask the question, how far down do we have to go Do we have to be like the Chinese, like we talked about last night, where a third of the children have extremely high levels of lead in their bloodstream? They're going to suffer from brain damage. They're going to suffer from kidney damage, liver damage. Is that where we have to go back to? Do we have to go back and relearn all of the lessons? Because if you listen to Monday's debate between the seven dwarfs, they all were reading off the same script. In fact, they couldn't outdo one another any faster when it comes to tearing down regulations, when it comes to giving handouts to corporations and to the very wealthy. They couldn't go down fast enough. They couldn't get to the bottom fast enough.
We're running out of rich people in this country.
Yeah, we are. We're running out of rich people.
You know, we're running out of rich people, so we need to make more. And we need to deregulate.
There is no other agency like the EPA. It should really be renamed the Job-Killing Organization of America.
So you go back and you think about the Chinese that we talked about last night. A third of their children. And I know the guy, the father who they interviewed, whose kid has got brain damage, really, really serious trouble for this kid. Goes, you know what? I've worked hard. We work all these hours. My wife and I, we work all these hours. We sacrifice. We do all so that that child could have what we didn't. And now look what's happened. And I think about that. Are these the countries we want to compete with? Is this the competitive model that we want? This whole free trade movement, all of this mantra, we need free trade, open borders. No. We got to at some point wake up and realize that we're getting our hats handed to us. We're getting beaten at every opportunity. And you know what is sad about it is? We are the most productive workers in the world. Productivity rates in this country have skyrocketed, while at the same time our wages have continued to go down. And why is that? It's pretty simple. Because we haven't gotten down to 20 or 30 or 50 cents an hour yet. We haven't gotten down to a dollar an hour yet. We haven't gotten there. But trust me, you keep putting people like iMelt in charge, we will be. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make happy.
Where smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm guessing there's a race. He said race. Ever see the movie Rat Race? With the guy who looks like our lieutenant governor, Mr. Bean. You ever see that? He said race. I love that movie. We should get that clip. Go along with that because that was bad. We need a little more juice with that. Something a little happier, a little more. Democratic leaders today in the House of Representatives said they were going to try and force a vote on a China currency bill that House members overwhelmingly approved last year and that died in the Senate, according to Reuters. The House Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, said party members were circulating a discharge petition to force Republicans who control the chamber to bring the bill to pressure China to let its currency rise faster in value to the floor. That would require 218 signatures. Pelosi said the Republicans won't bring it to the floor. We are moving to discharge this legislation. The bill would clear the way for the U.S. government to consider currency undervaluation as a subsidy that can be offset with U.S. countervailing duties on Chinese goods. And they're saying with only a small portion of Chinese exports to the United States would likely be affected, the legislation would encourage U.S. companies to file more trade cases against China. And I keep, you know, I got to be honest, I keep wondering why they don't do that anyway. You know, when the steel workers, a union, they're it's not their job to produce these things. It's their job to protect their members. It's their job to stand up for their members. So you got the representative of the workers going to the government, going to the world trade bodies, saying, you guys are screwing us on pipe. You guys are screwing us on tires. We're going to file these trade cases. We're going to make sure that our workers are protected. And especially in the tire case. The tire case was really fascinating because the tire companies didn't want the steel workers to file the case. Why? They were happy the way things were because they were the ones importing the tires from China. I mean, it's really just mind-blowing that we have a system, we've allowed this system to set up, you know, and we blame China. Well, you know, it's the Chinese who are doing this. No, what's happening is it's American companies who are going to China, setting up these shops and then shipping these goods back. And most of what we call trade is not really trade at all. It's intercorporate movement of goods. So when you got XYZ Corporation who makes this product here in the U.S. and also in China moving things back to the U.S. from China, it's not really trade. What that is, that's just a company moving its product back in. Same thing with just about everything that we used to make here. Now, last year, when it came up to a vote, it was 348-79. 99 Republicans joined 249 Democrats to support this thing. I got to be honest. I would love to see where the T-Twizzlers fall on this. They're supposed to be the ones who are, well, we're going to protect America. They're going to be the ones who were going to scream the loudest, or I think they were supposed to be, right? Where are my T-Twizzlers on this? Where's the T-Twit position on trade? I thought it was America first. Yet there they are, walking with their T-Twit flag, made in China. And I did find someone who did that. Most of the people, to their credit, who carry those, the Gadsden flag there, I've only found one made in China. The rest of them are made in the U.S., but I did find that one guy. And his was a little off yellow, which is how I knew. But, you know, you look at this thing with China. What is it about us that we don't want to stand up? And you know why we don't want to stand up and fight it? You know why the Republicans are going to fight this back? Because it's big U.S. corporations who are doing this. So don't blame the Chinese for beating us up. Don't blame the Chinese for eating your lunch. Don't beat them up for taking your job. They took my job. Don't blame them. Blame the white guy with the white shirt and the tie and the big smile. Mr. CEO, blame him for making the choice to move it over. Blame him for paying the lobbyist to push for trade agreements with South Korea and Panama and Colombia. Blame them. Blame every person who passed NAFTA, from Bill Clinton right down to every last Republican and every last Democrat who voted for it. That's who you blame. Blame these big bankers. Blame Wall Street. Blame Walmart. Don't blame China. They're just doing what we're letting them do. That's all.
Well, that Supreme Court decision makes it even tougher for a Republican to stand up. Why? Because now you got the U.S. Chamber filtering tens upon tens of millions of dollars every political cycle into the pockets of mostly Republicans, some Democrats, but mostly Republicans, money coming from Chamber of Commerce members in other countries. And they don't even have to disclose it.
They're saying that the Chinese currency is undervalued by as much as 40%, which means, and what's that mean? What's that mean, Rick? Their currency is undervalued by 40%. That means our dollar's strong. We've got a stronger dollar. No, what that means is that their goods shipping into this country are going to be 40% less than the goods we're going to ship over to them. So what kind of a trading situation you're going to have? You're going to have one with a massive deficit. In fact, in 2010, we had a record deficit with China, $273 billion. Now understand, they've got this nice pot of gold, $273 billion in a nice big sack. Where do you think that money has to come? It's got to come right back here. And what do you think they're going to do with it? They're going to buy our debt. They're going to buy our companies. They're going to buy our property. Someone was telling me the other day there's a state out in the West, I'm losing it, Oklahoma maybe, where the Chinese are actually building an industrial complex where they're building their own factories and their own manufacturing places, and they're bringing in their workers to work in those, basically making their own little China place. It's Chinatown. And we're going to let that happen.
Well, apparently, that Chinese businessman that was talking to one of the prospective Republican candidates, from, you know, the big money man from New York. If you remember his statement about a month ago, he said he was talking to a Chinese businessman, and this Chinese businessman said, "I cannot believe," and he was laughing. He was literally laughing. I said, "I cannot believe that your government allows us," meaning Chinese businessmen in China, "to do to you people what they allow us to do." They were laughing at us. They
basically saying, "I can't believe how dumb you are. I can't believe you're dumb.
I can't believe," he's basically saying, "I can't believe that the U.S. government is giving us the keys to the kingdom.
You're dumb. You're dumb. What's wrong with you?"
Pretty much. Pretty much.
And we are. I mean, and it's not funny, but we are. And yet we are divided on dumb stuff. We're divided on gay marriage and abortion and things that are never going to go away. Problems you're never going to solve. Even if you make it illegal, people are still going to do it. It's still going to happen. It's like this bizarre war on drugs. When I was a kid, knew it was going to fail. Okay, let me get this straight. Just say no. Okay, Nancy, you're going to jump right on that. People have been doing this since the beginning of time. In fact, the book I read just back in high school, the Sherlock Holmes books, you know, talking about Sherlock got lost for a week. He was holed up in an opium coffee house with all kinds of cocaine. But I'm going to say no. Let's see how that works out. We're back after this.
Don't know much about the French I took, but I do know that I need you. And if you fall for all the crap I spew, what a wonderful
listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Battle of Blair Mountain was commemorated recently by a 50-mile march and rally in West Virginia. That battle was the largest armed confrontation in U.S. history between workers and corporate gun thugs.
Solidarity forever.
As marchers set off on the five-day trek to Blair Mountain, a retired miner proudly held aloft a sign representing United Mine Workers of America, Local 1440. Its 1,200 members endorsed the march and rally to save a critical piece of labor history. The battlefield along the mountain ridge is where, in 1921, thousands of miners fighting for the right to join the union confronted coal company security forces and county sheriffs allied with the coal barons. Although national UMWA leaders support preserving the battlefield, they did not endorse the march. Chuck Keeney is the great-grandson of Frank Keeney, a mine workers' leader from 1917 to 1924, who was at the Battle of Blair Mountain. He says the miners' fight for collective bargaining rights, which was not won until more than a decade after the battle, was a key demand.
This is where people laid the groundwork for an American middle class, you know, for weekends, for 40-hour work weeks. And if you think labor organizations aren't important now, look at Wisconsin, look at Michigan, look at all of the things that's happening. These issues are incredibly important, and Blair Mountain is a place where people can rally to that and see that labor is something that's vitally important to the economic prosperity of the United States.
On Blair Mountain, West Virginia, I'm Melinda Tuhus, reporting for Workers Independent News.
As WIND's Lauren Schmidt reports, there's a people's alternative to the Republican take from the workers to give to the rich Wisconsin state budget. The People's Rights Campaign and the Labor Community Network marched to Department of Administration Secretary Mike Hipsch's office to demand accessibility to their house, decrying Hipsch as a public menace for crushing the public's right to assemble.
The campaign delivered their demands that DOA Secretary stop the attacks and open the Capitol.
We're a part of the People's Rights Campaign, which is really talking about putting forward an alternative agenda. We reject this budget, and that cuts are the only answer. Cuts are not the answer to the budget crisis. We need to look at making sure the corporations and the rich are paying their fair share. Woo! And we need to talk about expanding education, making sure there's good jobs, providing health care for people in this really difficult time. They're taking Wisconsin in the wrong direction, and we're looking at really turning things around and making sure that we put forward our own agenda that's about people and people's rights and not about profits for corporations and Wall Street.
How do you solve a deficit?
Tax, tax, tax the rich!
Pacifica Radio called it riveting. Get your copy of WIND's one-hour documentary, This is What Democracy Looks Like, Wisconsin's Worker Uprising, at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Anyway, you know, all of this talk about cutting spending, cut, 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 cut. And we've heard it ad nauseum. I mean, really, that's their selling point. We're going to cut spending. That's going to solve all our problems. In fact, I was watching a video today with Paul Ryan. And, you know, he did this, you know, the whole graph thing. If we do nothing, our GDP, you know, our debt will go to 5 million times our GDP. But if we follow my plan, we'll be under 20%. And he never tells you how you're going to get there. Never tells you what it's going to take, in his view, to get to the under 20%. And you go back and you stop and you think about the Ryan plan. What it means is it means we're going to destroy Social Security. It means we're going to end Medicare. It means we're going to end social justice, social responsibility to the poor and the disabled. We're going to end Medicaid, turn that into a block grant. And so we kept hearing when the Seven Dwarfs had their little testimony there, when they were testifying, They all said the same thing. We need block grants for the state because the states are laboratories. What I've seen, and you know, if you disagree, I'd love to hear from you. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I look at our economic development plans, and the laboratories have basically been one state trying to screw the other state by stealing jobs away and offering more tax dollars that they get from the federal government, because the southern states take more federal tax dollars than the northern states get back. So they have more disposable income, and they have an exploitable workforce, of course. And someone thinks that's a good idea. So what we see is this race to the bottom. We see this spiraling down because, you know, especially during the debate with the Seven Dwarfs, they kept talking about, oh, the right-to-work states are doing so much better. You know, those non-forced union states, they're doing so much better. No, they're not. They're stealing jobs from the North. Yeah, they are. They took, you know, jobs from right here in the area, Carlisle Tire and Wheel, 93 years in the community, 93. And they moved to Tennessee. And why'd they move? Because Tennessee gave them $34 million. And Tennessee allowed them to pay lower wages and almost no health benefits. You know, I've talked to some of the people who worked there, went down, came back. That's how they're doing it. So what we're doing is we're just rearranging the deck chairs. When they say Texas created jobs, when they say Tennessee created jobs, did they create those jobs or did they steal those jobs? I mean, we're not creating anything new. We're just rearranging things. And not for the better as a whole of society. It's not making all of our lives better. It's not making the country wealthier. It's actually making we, the people, poorer, but making the handful at the top much more wealthy. So I look today at Kay Bailey Hutchinson. She introduced legislation that she claims is going to gradually reform Social Security. We're going to reform it. Doesn't that sound nice? So she held her press conference. She outlined this grand plan, and starting in 2016, the retirement age every year is going to go up 3 months until 2023, where the top age, the maximum age, will now be 69 years old. They also want to reduce the cost of living adjustment. So folks who are on Social Security right now, they want to reduce that annual that COLA. Got to save a bunch of money, she says, because, you know, this way we can save money. And what save money means, again, means that we're taking it from you. She said that the Social Security Administration's chief actuary projected that her plan would decrease the national debt by $7.2 trillion by 2085 and decrease the deficit by almost half a trillion dollars over the next 10 years, $416 billion over the next 10 years. And I go, well, hold on. Take me back to the Ryan idea. We're going to slash benefits. We're going to destroy the system, but we're saving it. We're going to make it work like it used to. And it's all because of you greedy geezers, Jake. It's all because of the greedy geezers. It is. Ask Alan Simpson. 310 million people sucking off the government teat. That's what they think of you folks. Just a bunch of mooches. You want, all you people always wanting something.
Well, I'm going to tell you what I told you before about Alan Simpson's comment. Look, we worked our lives. We paid into it. We deserve every single dollar that we get from Social Security. So get over it.
Yeah, here's the thing, though. There are those who would deny it from you, Jake. There are those who want to take food out of your mouth. So it means no more double burgers on Meat Thursday. Going to have to do with just one.
Oh, no, not that.
But, I mean, that's the pitch, man, that, you know, that we're going to save these programs by stealing from them. And, you know, the whole thing that gets me is, why are we talking about raising taxes on the very well-to-do? again, you know, and Tom Coburn's, I think, surprised a lot of people today by coming out and saying, you know what, it's got to be on the table.
He surprised me.
But the question is how much? And who? Who's he going to tax? Again, I think it's going to come down to me paying higher taxes, the working people paying higher taxes, because you got to understand what the Republican mantra is. If you can create a crisis, you can exploit it. And if you can do something that's going to tick off the mass of the people, turn them against the government, even better. So what better to tick people off, turn them against their government, than raise their taxes? So maybe we see another situation like the Tax Reform Bill of 86, which I am predicting we will see. You will see a drop in the corporate income tax. Mark my word. Mark it on your calendar. Go get a calendar, a pen, write it down today, because it's as good as done, even though you don't know it yet. The corporate income tax is going to get dropped. The top marginal rate going to be dropped. Going to happen. The bottom rate is going to go up. Mark my words. This is going to happen. And they're going to say, we've solved the problem. And we've solved the problem on the backs of the middle class and the working class. And in the process, what they've done is they've put more pressure on the working class and constricted that even further so that they can't get to the middle. And we end up back in a pyramid shape where you got a handful of people at the top, very, very well to do, and as you move down the spectrum, poverty increases. That's what they want. That's the world. The hourglass.
Well, there's some pundits, and I'm sure they have their sources in Congress. And they're saying already that they believe there's a very good chance that the Democrats are going to agree to some substantial cuts in Medicaid.
Oh, and Medicaid's done. That's already done. Come on, we talked about that a long time ago. Medicaid is the sacrificial lamb. And the Republicans wanted that all along. They scared a bunch of old people, got them all, you know, all bunched in their depends, and, you know, got them out into the, you know, the town hall meetings and all ticked off when the real goal all along was going after Medicaid. Because it's easy to pit people against each other. So you got Granny, you got her depends all bunched up in a wad there, and now she's going, well, go after those people. They're younger. Go after those able-bodied people. Go after the poor. And now you've got the classic divide and conquer. You knew it was coming. Same thing over here with the education budget. Same thing here with Corbett. You knew it was coming. You knew he threw out that $1 billion. You knew the Republicans in the legislature were going to come through and restore some of it. Say, look how wonderful we are. Pat us on the back. While you still got a massive cut to education. But you can pat them on the back because they fought for you. They stood up for your school district. And then when your taxes go up, you can blame the governor. Or those Democrats. And that's always a good one. Blame those tax and spend Democrats. Just nuts. Just nuts. But, yeah, I mean, this whole Social Security thing, big trouble coming down the line. They are doing everything that they can do. To destroy that system that they've hated for the longest time. And, you know, you go back to the National Recovery Act that gave workers the right to organize, gave maximum hours, minimum wages, took children out of sweatshops, ended all of that. All things that, you know, the Republicans have fought for. Repeal all that stuff. Take us back pre-1933.
Well, all of what you're talking about, Social Security, you're talking about Medicaid, you're talking about Medicare, that just points out how tremendously critical next year's presidential election is, because we still have Obama with all his faults. We still have a president there that is a bulwark against taking away too much from the working people of the country. But if the Republicans can win, they can do severe, severe damage to this country. If they can gain back the presidency, they think they have a shot At the Senate. I'm not so sure about that, but, you know, the possibility
exists.
A lot of Democrats up. There are more Republicans up for election from the Senate this next year.
Now, understand.
Than Democrats.
Now, understand. The cuts that are coming are going to come from you. The cuts that are coming are going to come from Social Security, Medicaid, eventually Medicare, are going to come from social programs, discretionary funding. They're already setting up why we can't touch the sacrosanct defense budget In fact, yesterday, Defense Secretary Gates said he was very concerned that the House was going to cut $1 billion from funding to upgrades to nuclear weapons infrastructure. He told the Senate Appropriations Committee that, you know, well, we need this. We need this because the last time we had one, had this built, was in Los Alamos, New Mexico. It was back during the Manhattan Project, which, again, you kind of look at and go, it's been that long since we've invested in this stuff? We've let it crumble? We've let it go this long? And the answer is yes, but they're setting it up. You know, we can't cut the funding. We can't do this. We need to have all of this in place. So go look somewhere else. Mark my words. They're not going after defense. They're going after you. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, talk a little bit about the big race, the Republican primary, the seven dwarfs. Right back after this.
Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
If some predator was stalking fourth graders in your community, there'd be a mighty uproar to make the predator get away and stay away from your schools. But what if the stalker is the coal industry, dressed in an academic outfit and a gambit to brainwash fourth grade school kids? Unbeknownst to most Americans, grade schoolers are being targeted by the American Coal Foundation with a propaganda package stealthily titled, The United States of Energy. It's not mentioned in the materials, but Big Coal paid big bucks to Scholastic Inc. to develop the shamelessly distorted promotion of the dirtiest fuel on earth. The package fills little minds with the joys of having 600 friendly coal-fueled utilities generating electricity 24 hours a day. Not a peep is made about the toxic waste, air and water pollution, mine explosions, black lung deaths, mountaintop destruction, greenhouse gas emissions, political corruption, and other decidedly unfriendly aspects of what industry propagandists simply tout as black gold. This educational package has been distributed to 150,000 fourth grade teachers, potentially putting its perverted view into the heads of more than a million children. Of course, the coal giants could not have entered so many schools on their own, so they bought access to our kids through Scholastic, a $2 billion a year corporation that places its materials in 90% of U.S. classrooms. Indeed, Scholastic's in-school marketing division brags of its ability to, quote, promote client objectives by targeting teachers and students with classroom packages that, quote, make a difference by influencing attitudes and behavior. This is Jim Hightower saying, how sweet! To help stop this kind of predatory marketing, contact the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood, commercialfreechildhood.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
I'm ready to do what has to be done for the next generation, with the courage to fight for freedom, with the courage to fight for America. That's why I'm announcing today that I'm running for president of the United States.
One dude that scares me, just one guy who absolutely scares me. You know, the more I hear him talk, the more he talks about policy, the more he opens his mouth, the more afraid I become for this country. I gotta be honest, it's scary on so many levels that, you know, anybody would even take him seriously. Just amazing. Just amazing stuff. But really, honestly and truthfully, the whole pack, all the seven dwarfs, they're not too thrilled with. In fact, Polente, Mr. Tweedledee Tweedledum, he was tweeting about Mitt Romney And he said, you know, on seizing debate opportunity, re-healthcare me zero, Mitt one, on doing healthcare reform right way as governor, me one, Mitt zero. I'm going, exactly what does that mean? What did you do as governor of Minnesota? What did you do? Oh, that's right. Nothing. That's right. So you didn't do anything. You let the imaginary hand do it. You know, Romney, at least, I mean, I give Romney credit. He tried. Republicans in Massachusetts, Democrats in Massachusetts said, how can we make the lives of our citizens better? How can we bring the costs down for the insured? Make sure everybody has it.
He actually, Romney, the irony is, here's the irony. He actually did the nation a big favor, not just because he tried it, but it gave a
it was a laboratory.
It was actually.
It was a laboratory.
It was a template, a laboratory. It was a beginning, and we could learn. And I think, quite frankly, the framers of what we eventually came, is known as Obamacare, actually learned some lessons there.
Now, so if I can Romneycare.
If I can comment about Pallante, I think if there was a big loser, I think it, in the debate, I think it was Pallante.
Because he was a coward.
He was very pedestrian, very average, and he didn't go after.
He was a coward.
Romney. He didn't go after Romney.
And, you know, again, is that the kind of guy you want being in the White House? Someone that polite? And, oh, I'm gonna make my attacks, you know, from my couch. No, you stand up, you say what you gotta say. So he waits a couple of days and then he tweets something? Really? Is that what you want to do?
But he's a good tweeter.
Yeah, he's a twit, all right. Did you see the video of Mitt in New Hampshire with a couple of waitresses? And he kind of fake like she grabbed his behind.
Yeah, I heard about it.
I'm going, really?
I just can't picture that. I just can't picture Romney as a one of these guys that would do anything close to sexting or anything clear.
But he can't.
Anything, you know, close to that.
He can't, because as the Borowitz report yesterday said, Mattel didn't give him anatomical parts. But what I find interesting, and the reason I brought that whole thing up, you know, he was in Florida, I guess, and he was telling a group of people who've been out of work for a long time that, you know, hey, I'm out of work too. I'm also unemployed. Only one problem. You know, and I would love, honestly, I would love to be Romney unemployed. How do I get to be Romney unemployed? How do I get to be unemployed with $200 million and several homes? And how do I get to do that? You know, I mean, I think I'm gonna wake up today. Oh boy, I think I'm gonna run for president. Yeah. Never mind the help wanted. Nope. I'm gonna go run for president. I got $200 million in my pocket. I know all these rich people on Wall Street. Boy, I'm really struggling to find a job. And you know what? Let's use the right wing frame for a second. He's also unemployed. What's he been doing to try and find a realistic job? What's he been doing to try and find a job, you know, to put food on the table, get some health insurance? What's he doing? What's he doing? Nothing. He's running around pretending he's going to be president. I mean, stop and think about how he made his money, though. And this is what gets me. You know, when people say, oh, we want a business president. Do you know what a business president is going to do to this country? Honestly and truthfully, I'm being very serious here. What a business president will do to this country, the same thing that Mitt Romney did when he was CEO of Bain Capital. He's going to take companies, he's going to load them through debt, he's going to cut some off to die, he's going to run others through bankruptcy, and somebody else gets to hold the bag. So now picture this from the, now think about where you fit into all of this, because here in Harrisburg, there's a move to possibly take the city over, put it through Act 47, or to run it through bankruptcy. Do you know what happens in those scenarios? The workers lose. In a bankruptcy situation, what happens? They just, with a stroke of a pen, erase your pension. There's 30 years worth of your labor gone. The stroke of a pen. So when you heard all those people, and this is the thing that nobody was talking about when the Zach Womps from Tennessee and all of these southern senators were saying, let the auto industry go under. Yeah! Let him go under. What nobody was saying was, what it's really about is stealing the pensions of all those workers, stealing the health care, stealing the wages. Now, they sat down, they negotiated, and they negotiated lower rates for the workers, lower wages, lower benefits. But had they gone through bankruptcy, a bankruptcy judge would have done like they did with Bethlehem Steel, who was completely irresponsible as manager, buying hotels and golf courses instead of investing in steel industry. What they did, they came in, they just, bankruptcy judge, one slam of the gavel, one stroke of the pen, gone. Your life gone. That's what a business president is going to do. He's going to come in, he's going to, you know what? All those people who have been paying into Social Security, sorry, we can't afford it anymore. Gone. All those poor people who need Medicaid, all those poor people who need adult basic, just like our grand business governor here, Mr. Business Friendly, cut them all right off. Just throw them off the rolls. Let them fend for themselves. That's what a business president is going to do. If you want a corporate CEO to run this country, that's what's going to happen. They're going to bankrupt it. They're going to ruin the credit rating. They're going to steal off the assets, and they're going to stick you. That's what this is about. This isn't about team sport. This is about saving Social Security for people who need it in 5, 10, 15, 20 years because they want to steal that. I mean, they've already stole trillions of dollars. They don't want to pay it back. When Bush used to run around going, there's filing cabinets, I'll use. Just rows of them, rows of filing cabinets, I'll use. He's right. The difference is those IOUs, backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. That's your Social Security money. The money that Al Gore was laughed at when he said, I want a lockbox. I want to lock that money away. I want to make sure that it's there. It was laughed at. So when Romney said, oh, I'm just like you, I'm unemployed too. No, he's not. And then our girlfriend, Michelle Bachmann. You knew it was coming, and I can't wait for it. I can't wait for those lusty college nights, those drunken sorority girl nights. Can't wait for the book. I'm waiting for the book. She has cut a deal to publish her memoirs. The New York Times reported Bachmann, the congresswoman there from Minnesota, has signed a deal with Sentinel, a conservative imprint of Penguin Group USA, and a guy named John Fund, who is a columnist with the Wall Street Journal, will help her write the book. I'm sorry, will write the book, not help. I love that. I'm going to help her write the book. No, he's going to write the book. He's going to sit down. He's going to interview her. What's the gist? Which way you want me to go with this, honey? And he'll sit down. He'll write the book, and then she'll put her name on it. Because that's how books are made. If you think, you know, all these people sat down and you thought George Bush was hunting and pecking, doing the one-fingered move, no. Not happening. But she's going to get her own. She's going to get a book, and I'm waiting to see how much money. But I think she'll do all right.
And, and pray tell, what wild college did she go to with all these wild sorority parties?
I don't know. you know, hey.
She did graduate from college.
Of course she did. She's a tax attorney.
Okay.
When you hear her lay out her credentials, she sounds very rational. I mean, she sounds, you know, like an upstanding, normal human being. But you start listening to her speak and her religious zealotry, and this I give her credit. She's if I didn't know she was nuts, she would sound like a wonderful person. Someone who had 5 children, married all these years, took in all these foster kids. Man, nothing but kudos for that. God bless you. Thank you. The community appreciates it. This is what I think everybody should be doing and all that stuff. Good for you. Then you start talking about the insanity. Oh, boy. And being a tax attorney, not knowing some basic history, kind of scary as well. Maybe she just has bad speech writers. But here again, she's got her book deal, and I'm sure she went running out of the room going,
oh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah, baby.
Yeah, I'm sure she was thrilled.
Well, as crazy as she is in the right wingers, they've brought that whole, you call them the Seven Dwarfs. That's pretty appropriate. at least figuratively. Do you realize that Ronald Reagan would have a hard time getting a nomination among this group? I mean, Ronald Reagan raised taxes, dare we say it?
11 times.
Well, I was told 8. But
11 times.
We'll settle for 11.
4 times in 2 years.
That's heresy to them. He also negotiated with terrorists. That's heresy. He also ran away from Lebanon. And he also, say it ain't so.
Amnesty.
He gave amnesty to undocumented workers. There's 4 mortal sins for these conservatives. They just eliminated Ronald Reagan, who, by the way, they eulogize. If you listen to your girlfriend, she uses his name all the time. So does Plenty.
Anyway, let's take a quick break. Right back after this with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Back after this.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous. The salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it, we make it happen.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C. and across the country, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Delighted.
So, the big news?
Yes. Well, there's two things that happened at 2 o'clock this afternoon. You know, one of them was actually big news simply because it's obscured anything that the Democrats have been able to achieve in Congress, but it's not a big story. The other one actually involves $6 billion for the Treasury.
So
let's talk about Anthony Weiner.
I guess we have to.
We have to, because it's news. He announced his resignation today following revelations, that he sent sexually explicit messages and photographs of himself to women he met online. He talked about the distraction that he's created, said he was announcing his resignation, wants his colleagues to get back to work. But it was a little odd because he did say that he will be looking for other ways to contribute his talents to upholding the ideals of New Yorkers and other Americans. Now, he didn't say what that meant, and he didn't take any questions. He was heckled, by the way, throughout.
Yes, I know.
Until the police removed the heckler. So that's kind of interesting. You get the impression that he does intend to return at some point. He apologized to everybody again. And it was all very, very odd, all very, very strange. He apparently made the decision last night. His wife came back from a trip to Africa with Secretary Clinton. She is a senior aide to Secretary Clinton. In fact, the Clintons consider her a part of their family and are furious with Wiener. She came back very early Wednesday morning. Apparently, he talked with her, and the decision was made. He advised Nancy Pelosi, Representative Stephen Israel, when they were at the congressional picnic yesterday evening. So that must have been a fun time over the burgers.
Yeah, I would imagine. And I'm sure they had wieners as well.
I'm sure they did. I know they had burgers because I saw the grill. But where there's a burger, there's a wiener.
Generally.
Yes.
I mean, it's funny and it isn't. This guy was somebody that I thought was a fighter of working people, and to see him go down like this, to see the wiener go down, just kind of. On one hand, comically it's funny, haha, but it's sad for working people because he was a true voice.
He was, and there are so many bizarre elements in this story. Even if he hadn't sent the wrong tweet to the wrong woman, this story would have come out.
Eventually.
There were so many pictures out there. He had been so reckless.
And you go, what exactly were you thinking? I mean, if you're going to keep poking the right in the eye every single day and you're going to do what he was doing, don't you think somebody's watching? Don't you think someone's kind of keeping an eye on and maybe even pushing you in that direction? Which is why it's just mind-boggling to me why he would do this. You know, I understand teenage infatuation. I understand that mindset. But when you're public enemy number one to the radical right. Come on.
And he was public enemy number one. Wouldn't you be a little bit circumspect? There was an element of, and it's not even hubris. It was a kind of recklessness that you sometimes see in politicians. I mean, he's public enemy number one. Senator Charles Schumer is public enemy number two. And of course, he's Schumer's protege. But it wasn't only the recklessness. Then we had the very bizarre behavior of him turning around and saying that he was under attack, that he'd been hacked, and accusing Andrew Breitbart.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you know, when you know that you're only seconds away and they hit you with it, I'm telling you, I would have come out with a big 6-foot picture of an Oscar Mayer wiener or something and said, there it is. That's what's out there. Taking ownership for it, say, you know what, I did some dumb things, and I'm moving on. And just be honest about it. How hard is that?
Well, there's obviously some pathology there.
You know, like I tell my kids, if you do something wrong, tell me about it. You won't get into as much trouble. It's when you start digging that hole, and you dig, and you dig, and you dig, that you get yourself deeper.
And he seems like a smart guy. He knows that it's not the crime, it's the cover-up. Everybody's seen all the president's men.
Yeah, everyone saw what happened to Bill Clinton. I mean, if they're really family of the Clintons, don't you think Bill would have said, hey, Tony, buddy, just give in. Just go with it.
Well, Bill is furious.
How could Bill be furious? How could he have any say? He should be the guy going in the room going, oh, well, I screwed up too. I don't get it. I don't know how Bill can be furious.
But Bill's furious because this young woman was hurt. I mean, look, but we know that Bill Clinton is very able to juggle many different emotions and compartments of his life at the same time.
Yes, that this is the truth. What else is going on in Washington? No more wiener. We are now chopping off the wiener.
We are wienerless now. Okay, wiener has been neutered. For now,
the wiener has
he
landed.
Will return. He will. Well, very interesting vote. At the same time that Wiener was doing this bizarre thing, the Senate on Thursday, that's today, at 2 o'clock, started its vote to approve an amendment that would end tax credits for ethanol that refiners blend into motor fuel. Before you go hum, it was a 73-27 vote. That never happened. Not in this Senate.
Well, I think most people have realized that, you know, what's going on is we should be looking for other sources of fuel. This just, it really is, I don't think it's working as well as we thought it would. So you tried it, you move on.
Well, it's very interesting. It was an amendment by Dianne Feinstein. Now, the House will need to approve a comparable measure before it can be signed into law, so we'll see how that goes. You never know about the House. It will abruptly eliminate the tax credits if it goes through, which cost the federal government about $6 billion a year.
Wow.
Now, that's fascinating, and that's really a much bigger news story than the story that the cable news channels covered for 4 hours, well, 8 hours today. It's very interesting. Critics say it's a burden on taxpayers and food consumers and that the nation can't afford it in a time of big budget deficit.
Right.
And it's a big deal. The vote failed on Tuesday, the procedural vote, but that was all very, very technical. It's very interesting because it's also, the question is, okay, you have senators like Marco Rubio, Senator Jim DeMint, voting for this thing. And so by voting to end the tax credit, is that similar to voting to raise taxes?
Interesting. No, I don't think so.
No, okay.
Yeah, just off the top.
That's what Charles Schumer's trying to say. He's trying to say, well, if that's the case, then the next vote is to vote to end the oil tax.
I'm in favor of that. I'm absolutely in favor of doing away with that as well. Absolutely in favor of it.
It'll be interesting to see if they go there. I'm not sure that they will.
No, because the oil is too deep in their pockets. The special interest is too strong in their pockets. That's almost sacrosanct. You know, this little subsidy over here, no, not so much. What else is going on? A Supreme Court case?
Caught
your fancy?
Case. Yeah, a 5-4. We had a 9-0 on Monday, as you remember. Well, not for very long. Supreme Court said police and courts must consider a child's age when examining whether a boy or girl is in custody. Now, this is a move that the court's liberals called common sense, but the conservatives called an extreme makeover of Miranda rights. It was a 5-4 decision. It's a case in which police obtained a confession from a seventh-grade special education student while questioning him at school about a rash of break-ins in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Without reading him his Miranda rights, telling him he could leave or call his relatives. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who's a former prosecutor, wrote the opinion. She said, look, police have to consider the child's age before talking to them about the crime. She said also that the courts have to take the child's age into consideration when deciding whether that confession can be used in court. She said because children will sometimes feel bound to submit to police questioning.
Absolutely.
When an adult in the same questions would feel free to leave.
So who was the fifth vote?
Ah, very interesting. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, Stephen Breyer, and Anthony Kennedy.
Yeah, see, he's the most powerful guy on that court right now.
Yes.
Because he's the one who carries it. He's the one who decides. We should just let the other eight go home and just go to him. Because he's really the swing vote. He's the one who makes the decision, which is exactly the reason that I'm voting for President Obama come next November.
Well, you know, many liberals who are thinking of putting on their pajamas and camping out in their basements on Election Day might want to listen to what you said.
They might want to think about Anthony Kennedy. Ginsburg's not getting any younger. Breyer's not getting any younger. Whoever the next president is could appoint the next two justices, because the rest of them are fairly young. Scalia's a little older, but the rest of them are, they're going to be there another 10, 15 years at least.
Well, Alito wrote the decision for the other side and said that opening the door to considering age likely will mean that other characteristics could soon be added to the list, such as educational level, IQ, and cultural background.
I give up on their whole worldview.
Your head exploded, didn't it?
Yeah, I give up on their whole worldview. I mean, we're talking about kids here. How hard is it to go, hey, we're going to bring your parents in, we're going to bring an adult in, a ward of the court, somebody, some adult.
Sotomayor said it for you. She said it doesn't take college degrees or advanced training to know when police are dealing with an immature child. Quote, they simply need the common sense to know that a 7-year-old is not a 13-year-old and neither is an adult.
That's why she's on the Supreme Court and I'm just doing a little radio program. Victoria Jones, I appreciate the time. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much. See you tomorrow.
Thank you.
All righty. And what do you got for us tonight, Jake?
Yeah, some good news in the trade front coming out of the AFL-CIO. The United Steelworkers back in October filed a Section 301 trade complaint against China, alleging that China was doing a lot of things contrary to the WTO agreements, and they were subsidizing to the tune of literally billions of dollars Chinese companies who were in the renewable energy market. China was found guilty. According to Leo Gerard, he said that's good news for our members, U.S. companies and American workers. Needs to be followed up with continued vigilance to ensure the Chinese keep their commitments. Some good news on that front. We touched on the Colombian Free Trade Agreement, and we've been hashing and talking about the Colombian prospective free trade agreements. The Republicans have tried to get it passed now in several Congresses. What is happening this week, they have brought about 6 labor leaders from Colombia to Congress to try to get them to go out in the halls of Congress, not only to testify, but to talk to congressmen and try to tell them exactly why we should not be supporting the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. And according to their testimony, they said the action plan does not contain any guarantees that promised reforms in human workers' rights would be enforced. They pointed to the increasing poverty, unemployment, and crackdowns on unions as evidence that the government of President Juan Manuel Santos does not have the political will to make sufficient and real changes. In a nutshell, the Colombian government has made very little progress in the last 5 to 10 years toward improving human rights and guarantees of workers' rights in Colombia. That's why we should not pass this trade deal. And as of now, I'm not sure which way it'll go. Hopefully they will be effective. Another issue out of Penn Live, out of the Harrisburg Patriot. Almost on a daily basis, there's some new developments. Today, there was an article in the paper that concerned city council. I was looking to introduce resolutions that would allow bankruptcy paperwork to be prepared. City Councilman Kaplinski said the urgency of being prepared escalated Thursday when State Senator Jeffrey Pacola, it's easy for me to say, introduced legislation that called for a state takeover of Harrisburg should the distressed city fail to adopt the Act 47 plan. It was presented Monday. And his basic position was that if they agree without even looking in the options of bankruptcy, once you sign on with Act 47, it's a done deal. However, if you draw up the paperwork for a potential bankruptcy, what you're doing is giving the city some options. Now, the latest development, Kaplinski tried to introduce the resolution in the executive session on Tuesday, but that was met with resistance from the city clerk and Gabler, as well as the city solicitor and the council members. And this whole issue gets a little complex and involves the responsibility and what price we're going to ask the bondholders to pay, and that gets into political connections. So we'll have to wait and see on that issue. It's getting very interesting, but there's high stakes in this, and it'll be interesting in the next couple of weeks to see what comes out of that, Rick. That's my report.
All righty, let's take a quick break. Right back after this to wrap things up.
Time got, so you might start drowning in crafts and lies. Save the USA and resume the size of mine. Stop taking all our money and shipping it offshore. Do the job and join the good
force. Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
On July 5, 1935, the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law. It is also known as the Wagner Act after its chief sponsor, New York Senator Robert Wagner. Prior to its passage, Senator Wagner chaired the National Labor Board, created by Franklin Roosevelt in 1933 to attempt to bring order to labor-management relations. The National Labor Board consisted of three representatives from labor and three from industry, with Wagner as the chairman. It was here that Senator Wagner realized government assistance was required to level the playing field if labor unions were to effectively bargain with management. President Roosevelt said of the National Labor Relations Act, "It should serve as an important step toward the achievement of just and peaceful labor relations in industry." Hailed as the Magna Carta of labor, once the National Labor Relations Act was signed into law, workers were encouraged and protected to exercise their newly recognized rights to freedom of association, self-organization, and engage in concerted activities for the purpose of collectively bargaining through a representative of their own choosing in order to establish wages, hours, and conditions. Employer interference, such as threats and intimidation, firing, refusing to negotiate with the union, and discrimination for union activity were expressly prohibited. These illegal activities are described as unfair labor practices by the law. The impact of the Wagner Act on American life was substantial. The standard of living for American workers, their families, and communities was extraordinary. Unionization rates increased to a high of 35% of the American workforce as American workers demanded their rights. Working men and women finally had a unified voice to stand up and fight for dignity, respect, and safety in their workplace. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Well, they shut it down. I got a right to go to work, but there's no work here to be found. Yes, and they say, we're gonna have to be, we're told. We're gonna have to be from something that's been sold. And the birds up on the wires, and the telegraph pole, they can always cry right from the street and the school. You can hear them all singing out the telegraph.
Not sure where I'm supposed to come in, but I like the song. Right there on Telegraph Road. I like it. I like Dire Straits. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website, therickSmithShow.com. Missed any portion of the program? If you were busy doing something else, watching TV maybe, I got to be honest with you. Got to be honest. Reports are out now. You got to be ever vigilant. A review of published studies over the past 40 years, according to Agency France Press, shows that people who watch TV, they have a higher risk of diabetes, higher risk of heart problem, higher risk of early death. That's what U.S. researchers are saying this week. The results of a meta-analysis performed by scientists at the Harvard School of Public Health, published on June 15th issue of the Journal of American Medical Association, watching TV 2 hours per day, that's it, 2 hours a day, boosts your risk of type 2 diabetes and heart disease, while more than 3 hours a day, well, that's going to increase your risk of premature death. So don't stop watching TV. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. If you missed any portion of it, you can download the podcast right there at our website at therickSmithShow.com. For the health of the nation, don't watch so much TV. We're here 3 hours a night to help you get over the TV thing. We're here for you. We want to make sure that you're healthy, wealthy, and of course, wise as we move forward. A couple of quick stories. I don't know if you saw this, but in the Beltway down there in D.C., There's been a lawsuit filed after a car crash. This happened, a couple years back. But the lawsuit in Fairfax County was about this crash where, kind of surprising stuff. Let me read through the lines of the Fairfax County lawsuit, the court's lawsuit there. Paragraph 10, quote, at a time of collision, defendant was going 85 miles an hour. Paragraph 12, at the time of collision, defendant was having sex with a female. Paragraph 13, at the time of collision, defendant was admittedly drunk. 14, at the time of the accident, defendant was partially or totally in the back seat of the car. 85 miles an hour, in the back seat of the car, having sex. What happened to paragraph 11? I want to know what happened in paragraph 11. They're not telling us. Anyway, the defendant's lawyer, Frank Pryor, said there was no statement by anyone that they were driving on the Beltway having sex and no fact of it. The plaintiff, a 28-year-old cab driver, he's seeking $75,000 in damages. So evidently there was a third person in the car who does not admit to driving the car either. So I've got this mental image. Three people just heading down the road, two people in the back seat having sex, the other guy, who knows, maybe 85 miles an hour. They're lucky they're here. Now, I mean, I just go, wow, that's pretty amazing. And that's one of those stories that they're going to live to tell their children years and years and years down the road. Good for them. Another good driving story. Los Angeles driver was charged, according to UPI, with a misdemeanor, drunk driving, after she allegedly ran over 11 bicycle riders. So she was drunk, driving down the road, ran over these 11 cyclists. My question is, what were 11 cyclists doing out at 2 o'clock in the morning? I get why the drunk is driving home. I don't get why the people on the bikes were pedaling along the road. She's out on $15,000 bond, and good for her. Here's some good news out of my home state of Ohio. You know, the more I talk about it, the more glad I live here. UPI has reported that a law allowing Ohio gun owners with the appropriate permits to take their guns anywhere they want to go. And that means right there in bars. Governor Kasich is expected to sign the measure, and the Cleveland Plain Dealer reported, if the bill becomes law, Ohio will have one of the most liberal firearm policies in the country. I cannot wait to hear the stories of two nitwits getting drunk, throwing shots, and killing two other people besides themselves. Because as you know, drunk drivers never kill themselves. It's always someone else. So drunk shooters, I'm sure, will be no different. And the last story for the night, from San Francisco, a University of New Mexico football player who had his drawers down around his knees walking into the airport was asked to leave the plane. He was arrested for causing a ruckus by not leaving the plane. I'm sure there are a lot of people thrilled that Deshaun Marmon, 20, was taken off the flight with his drawers down behind underneath his buttock and showing off his boxer shorts. He was thrown off the plane and arrested for, causing trouble and injuring a cop. Anyway, great show tonight. Thanks for being here. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
brazen, but the weight is. Everything's brazen, but the weight is.